Kisses too, I never knew what they could do. I can't believe that you're in love with me. You are telling everyone.
I would like to call to order the special workshop of the Goleta City Council. First, perhaps you would join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, if you would call the roll.
Councilmember Seves.
Present.
Councilmember Bennett.
Here.
Councilmember Perotti.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Valleja.
Here.
Mayor Farr.
Here.
Okay, Mr. Mayor and council members, I'm going to kick this workshop off, but as with past workshops, we have a combination of staff that will be participating and covering some of the subject areas. We have a new face on the dais helping us today, Jamie Shaw. She is a part-time employee with my department, but she does work directly for our community relations manager, Valerie Kushnerov. So we're really happy to have Jamie helping us here today. As we go through the process, you'll see how her role will be critical to recording changes that council may wish to make to the document that we're going to go through. The reason why we're here is that council, as you know, has already established a document which reflects your rules of decorum and procedure that was first established back in 2012, and the purpose was to improve communication, the public process, transparency, clarify roles of staff and the city council. The rules were again reviewed and modified slightly in 2014. And today we're here because council has requested an additional review and asked for a workshop format to go through the document and provide input and direction. That's all I have. So today we're somewhat informal because it's a workshop setting, but what we're going to do first is review the protocols as they are today. So our city attorney Tim Giles will be walking us through them, and as we go through, it may occur to you that you have a question, a comment, or something you want us to revisit later in the program. So while Tim is doing his review, Valerie Kushnerov will be recording any comments and questions that you have on our flip chart, our parking lot as we call it, so that we know what items we're going to return to later in the program. After we go through the existing rules, we'll take a quick break. There are refreshments in the conference room next door, and when we return and reconvene, we'll start going through the proposed changes that were identified by staff and also from some council input that we included in the staff report that we provided all of you and published earlier this week. And as I mentioned, after that review, we'll return to the parking lot and address any of those items that come up as part of our discussion. And we'll again propose any other, we'll review any other proposed changes that council comes up with as we move along. What we're trying to accomplish by the end of this workshop is a consensus from council on what you would like to have changed in the rules of decorum and procedure document and the things that you're fine leaving just the way they are. I think at the end, we should get to a point where staff is clear on what changes need to be made. We'll go back, make those changes, bring them to council on the consent calendar at a meeting in the near future so that you can adopt those changes and it makes it all official. That is all I wanted to cover in the introduction, but I'd like to pause for any questions that you may have.
I kind of missed that with the parking lot. Are we talking literally the parking lot?
No, the flip chart that we refer to as the parking lot. It's our colloquial term where we park our ideas and our concepts when we want to revisit them later.
Right. Well, your gesture was in the general direction of the parking lot.
Well, they are in the same direction, so I could see how that would be confusing.
I don't even have my hat.
Any other questions or points of clarification?
Thumbs up. Let's go.
Okay. So then we'll turn it over to Tim Giles.
Come on. Okay, a couple of things. I'm going to work off of here. Two things. One, if I sit at the end, I can't look you in the face, and I think this helps with our communication, and I kind of like being out here in the middle. Anyways, we'll work off of the screens. We've got all of the protocols on the slides. We'll be able to walk through them. As Michelle said, what I want to do is my portion is to go through what we currently have, what the council has adopted in the past. Couple of questions that you ought to keep in mind as we're going over them. We have, as we see it, three goals. You may have additional goals. One is the promotion of efficiency. We want these rules to help us, staff and council, run the government for the people efficiently. So the question is, does this rule help us operate efficiently? Second, we want to make sure that we're transparent. We want the people to know what it is we're doing. We want them to be able to participate, and they can't participate if they don't know what we're doing. So as we go through these rules, ask yourself the question, does this help make our decisions, our decision process, our governance transparent? Can the people see because of this rule? Does it make it easier or harder for them to see what's going on? And then the third thing would be, does this role help us? Is it consistent with the roles, the differentiation of our roles? Does this make it easier or harder for council to do its job? Does it make it easier or harder for staff to do its job? We know that we a lot of times have issues with that staff gets involved in a higher level policy making, which that's your role. But we also want to make sure that we approach the rules in such a way that it's easy for council to say, no, we're going to restrict ourselves to making the policy decisions with an expectation that council is going to implement without interference, because that's efficient. So we want to kind of keep that in mind as we go through these, look at these rules and say, does this help us differentiate the proper roles for council, for staff? Our current rules, norms, protocols, are broken up into three sections, and they start with the norms. these are generally statements of expected character, expected action. It's really to tell you, you know, what you're supposed to be about as you're doing a job. You're kind of overarching goals. They're not specific procedures, but just an expectation that you have set for each other. And along those lines, it's an expectation that you agree to hold each other accountable to. That if somebody is observing that you're not following these norms, your expectation is that they're going to come to you and say, hey, we agreed to do this, and you kind of crossed the line here. So you want to keep that in mind as well. The middle section is the role of the mayor, the council, city manager, city attorney. We go through in each of those different roles and try and specify what is the expectation, what are the general things that are supposed to be done as you sit in those various roles. And then third, we have a number of procedures that council has adopted, primarily for how council goes about conducting its business, so that as issues come up, you already know this is the way we do things. It doesn't cover every situation, but it does cover a number of situations and gives predictability to each other, to the public, and to staff.
Jim, if I might, will you, in the course of your presentation, will you identify the areas where you think there may be some disconnect or some friction or something that we're hoping to rectify by this meeting?
We will cover that. We're going to stay away from that in my presentation. Staff has identified some areas. We gave an opportunity for council and staff to each individually tell us areas where they thought that there was room for improvement, areas where they thought there might be some better ways of doing things, and where there might be some gaps. And so when we get past the this is what we're doing, then we're going to get into some of our suggestions, as well as suggestions that you come up with today as we go through this refresher portion to remind ourselves what the rules are. So my expectation in this first part is just to say this is what you've agreed to do. This is what we're all supposed to be doing at this point in time. I don't want this to be story time. I don't want to just read it to you. But if you have questions, wait a minute. What does that mean? How does staff interpret it? How are you doing that? From a standpoint of what does this rule mean in practicality, that's a good thing. If it's I think we should revisit that. We need to think about that. We need to think, maybe we need to think about a different way of doing things. That's, go ahead and say that. But that's what Valerie's going to capture. And then we'll come back to those areas where there's opportunity, there's a need to discuss specific protocols. First, we want to get right through them all and say, this is what we've agreed to. This is what we've done up to this point in time. So if there's clarifying questions, be sure and ask me those now as to what they mean now. If you want to look at talking about changing it or putting something else in place, stop me and we'll get Valerie to put them on the list and we'll talk about them later.
Tim, just real quick, one question. When we go through the norms, we'll update them later. But the responsibility for adhering to the norms relies on the council.
That's correct. Okay. Yeah, that's one of the things that we've set out. We discussed with the council that was in place at the time when we first put these in place. How do you want to enforce these? And it was clear the only way to enforce these are council adopted and they're council enforced. There's an expectation that you're going to hold each other to these standards. Now, it is helpful for staff, particularly on procedures, when we have a clear idea of council's expectation. We want you to follow this procedure, because then we can remind council, the five of you decided this is the way to do this. This is the way we want you to handle this situation. There is a myriad ways that could be done, all legally appropriate, all could accomplish the purpose, but if we know what council's expectation is, we can follow those procedures. And so in those instances where we're being asked to do something, it's helpful for us to say, council, this is what everybody's decided on. But particularly with the norms, but also with the procedures, it's up to the council members to go to each other and say, hey, we agreed to do this a little bit differently. Let's get back to doing it that way. Okay, the introduction to the norms. What council has adopted as an introductory statement is that in order to assure the efficient and effective administration of local government and to enhance the confidence of the public in the Goleta City government, the members of the Goleta City Council establish and agree to the following norms of personal conduct. That's what we agreed to and what the expectation of staff is in going into this process is. When we get through this, you've reviewed everything, you've discussed any changes or amendments that you want to make to those rules, that you'll be able to make this affirmation as well, that the rules that we come up with as they're embodied after this workshop, you'll be able to make this statement as well. here are the norms. These are the expectations. These are council's expectations for each other and for us. To encourage public participation and transparency of government. To act ethically with integrity and in the public interest. Treat each other, staff, and members of the public respectfully. Do not criticize staff or others in public. Go through that first slide. Is there any of those that council has any questions as to what they mean or how they apply, or that you want Valerie to put on the list? Seems pretty straightforward. We start with the easy ones. Okay. Treat all members of the public equally. Respect the roles of elected officials, city manager, and city attorney. Communicate and direct the administrative functions of the city through the city manager. Communicate and direct all legal issues and questions of the city to the city attorney. Strive for consensus and listen to each other's views. Disagree agreeably and professionally. Share information and avoid surprises. Work together as a body, modeling teamwork and civility. I didn't know if when they allocated me 45 minutes if that was going to be enough, but if we don't have any questions as we go through these, I'm going to breeze through these really quickly.
Can we put the legal issues in the parking lot, please?
The last one on slide 4-6?
Yeah.
And I guess when you say share, let me read it here, share information, avoid surprises, and we're not really supposed to share among councils, I mean, without a Brown Act violation, correct?
Correct. I was going to go back, because if I was going to make an aside here on my experience, my career, looking at these two norms in the middle here, they're generally norms that everybody subscribes to. But I would say the second one, this council does a really good job with. There are disagreements among the council. Every council has disagreements. But you are generally able to speak very civilly. There is very little hostility or animosity in the disagreement of ideas, and I think you're to be commended for that. I think you follow that norm very well. There's a real challenge when we get to share information and avoid surprises. It's hard for council members, and we've set up a system which invites council members to, hey, bring up a new idea at a city council meeting. If staff doesn't know about that prior to the council meeting, we're caught flat-footed. We can't really respond. We can't respond very adequately. We can't provide an efficient answer that's going to help the public or the council. If you share that with the city manager in advance, city manager has an opportunity to talk to the staff people, find out an answer. Then when you bring that question up at the council meeting, city manager can say, I have a little bit of information about that. And let me explain, give the council a little bit more information. It's a more efficient way of adopting this. You're right. None of these are intended to be a Brown Act violation, where council would be getting a collective concurrence among the full or a majority of the body. Certainly, one council member can talk to a second council member, as long as you're not involving a majority in that. That's not a violation. Once you've talked to another, you're on the verge of it. You know, either one of you then sharing with a third, and you're in violation of the Brown Act. So we discourage that, but there are opportunities. There are a lot of times where you don't know. You've got an idea. You don't know if you're just such a crazy outlier that you just don't even want to put that idea out in public. So you want to vet it with somebody else. Hey, colleague, you know, this is what I'm thinking about. Is this crazy, or is that something that you think that might be a good idea? And if well, you know, there's another person there. Yeah, maybe I can bring this up. Maybe I can talk to the city manager. Maybe I can bring this up to the full council. There you've shared that idea rather than just bringing up an idea that staff and the rest of the council had no idea was coming up with. And if it's something that the rest of the council has no interest in, it probably doesn't lead to an efficient operation of our governance. Is that more than answer your question?
That was perfect. No, that's fine. Thank you.
Okay, on the next slide. Represent the city's official policies and council position while expressing one's own position and state clearly when it is his or her own opinion. This is something that comes up a lot. And I think the council has always been very cognizant of this distinction. As you read it, as I was just reading it, it sounds like a paradox. You know, we're, as council members, we're gonna stand lockstep even if we didn't vote for it. But yet, I'm not. I'm in the minority. I disagree with this. And so it's embodied in one norm to recognize both of those things. I'm a member of a body, and I support that body's decisions, even if I have a different opinion. I can express that different opinion, but I need to express it in such a way that it doesn't undermine or show that our body is not united. We have a different opinion on this issue, but I'm not undercutting them. This is the council's position as a body. My individual position is this, and this is my individual position. I've seen pretty much all of you at one time or another fulfill this norm and express it in that way. This, I am sharing with you my personal view on this. I am not speaking for the council on this issue. That's what this norm is asking you to do, and the council is good about doing that. Foster a positive working environment with staff and elected officials from other governmental organizations. Keep confidential matters confidential. Respect the independence and recommendation of the city's appointed bodies, appointed boards and commissions. My economy of words wanted to make that just bodies and eliminate calling them by both. Okay, those are the norms. Those are the expected conduct, just the general expectations. Are questions on those before we move into the various roles?
Yeah, if I might, on the norms here, quite frankly, I would say we deserve a pat on the back for this. I mean, I think we really are doing very well to keep to the norms that have been established. So that's my appreciation of it. Now, there's also a question that I wanted to bring up, and you tell me if this isn't the place, if this more likely falls into the next discussion. We had a situation the other night here where there was a presentation made on the bike path on Hollister. There was considerable disagreement on the council with the way that was heading. So what is the protocol for the next discussion rather than have it just disappear into the void and perhaps come back in a timely manner or not? What is there any procedure for identifying what the specific grievances are and conveying those to the appropriate staff? And again, if the thing about being critical of staff, you know, kind of brought this to mind, but is there a procedure rather than just leave it out there as council's displeasure for trying to incorporate the criticisms that were made into creating a project more to our liking? So
I'm going to ask Valerie to capture that on our flip chart. We'll go through the procedures in a little bit. I think you identified properly. That discussion probably does touch on a number of the norms that we have, but the question is appropriately stated. Do we have a procedure? So let's get through the procedures and look and see if there's something there. Valerie's already going to be capturing it, but as we go through, if you see one and say, hey, is this one that would apply, let's talk about it at that from the point of understanding what our current policies are, or if this is a gap in our current policies, and if we don't touch on it, it's already on the parking lot list, and we'll cover it in that section.
And then just to be clear, if we're going to add things to the norms, we'll do that later.
You can do that later, or if you'd like to have them captured on the list now so that we can discuss them later, we can do that. It would be helpful for us in managing the workshop to know what are the issues that you'd like to talk about when we get there. So if there are things here that you'd like to have council discuss on the norms, this would be a good time to add them to the list.
Then I'd like to add political activity.
I, along with Mayor Farr, one of the norms is do not criticize staff or others in public. If we could really discuss that a little bit more and define criticize versus I'd like to talk about that a little bit more. Because I think we do a pretty good job of not, but I think we should talk about it.
Excellent. We probably should talk about that one. I think there's a lot to discuss, and I think you're right. I think the council generally does a very good idea. But I think in a discussion of that, we can figure out if we're all on the same idea, same page as to what it means and if it needs to be refined.
Yeah.
So we've
thank you.
We're capturing that one too. Yes, got it up there. Okay, anything else on the norms you'd like to put on the parking lot to discuss further as we come back? Okay. The next is the roles of the different positions within city government. So we'll look at the role of the mayor, the role of city council members, the role of city manager, and the role of city attorney. Council did not intend these lists to be exhaustive, but more primarily for differentiation purposes. This is your job, which means it's not somebody else's job. In other words, if this is the council's job, it's not the city attorney's job. If this is the city manager's job, it's not the mayor's job, whatever that might be. So as we go through these, look at these roles, again, same kind of rules, same expectation as we go through it. If you don't understand or have a question about what that means or how we're applying that, then let's talk about that now. If it's something that you'd like to revisit, have a council discussion as to whether or not it's something you want to keep or change, let us know. We'll put that on the parking lot. All right, we'll start with the role of the mayor. And again, these are your adopted roles as you have them in the protocols. The role of the mayor is to chair city council meetings, represent the city council and the city of Goleta, officiate at ceremonies, collaboratively set city council meeting agendas with the city manager. Any questions on that?
I have one comment on chairing the committees. It doesn't say here, the council adopted Robinson's Rules of Order, but it doesn't say here that we must adhere to it.
The two things, you're correct, and let's capture that. I do think that that is on the protocols. I know I've seen it. I don't remember if it was listed in the protocols or maybe in the resolution adopting it. And what we adopted was Rosenberg's and not...
Rosenberg's.
Right, not Roberts, which is a more formal set. So we do want to talk about that. It'll be good as we talk about that, too, to remind the council, because you all weren't here when we adopted these in the first place, or when we adopted the rules of procedure. And so there's, I can give you my thoughts on those from a legal perspective and how I view my role on those as well. So that will be a good one to take up. This other slide here for the role of the mayor. Create time estimates for each agenda item. Exercise authority to set time limits for public comment and presentations. Foster decorum and respectful comments at city council meetings. So as you think of the different roles and as each of you get to rotate through that chair as mayor or have, to think about this, are these things what you need to be efficient? Are these properly differentiating the policy roles versus the administrative roles? How do these things play out? Let me add here, I'm thinking about this because I spent all day yesterday working on your next council meeting agenda, and at your next agenda item, we're going to have an opportunity for you to adopt some resolutions. We're going to put questions on the ballot in November. One of the questions that you've asked for us to give you the opportunity to put on that ballot is whether or not you want a directly elected mayor. So you should be asking the question of, does that, if the voters approve that, does that change what we're doing here? And so let me give you the legal aside that with the directly elected mayor, nothing changes in the role of the mayor. The mayor still functions the same way, pursuant to state law. Whatever those functions are, they're allocated to the mayor, still the same. The mayor doesn't get a car, doesn't get a full-time position and salary. The mayor doesn't have the sole role as the city manager's boss. you still function as a individual city council member. You vote on all of the items. It's not just a veto. All of those things that we've come to be used to in how the mayor functions as it relates to the other city council members, being the city council member who has some administrative and some ceremonial duties that are different than the other city council members, that distinction is still going to be in place. That's what state law calls out. If you want to change those things, the opportunity to do that is with a charter which says, no, we're not going to do things the way the state has said. We want to do things the way Goleta wants to do them. And we haven't at this point in time decided to pursue that. So the mayor role, all of the things that we're talking about here, wouldn't necessarily change with the directly elected. What you have then is that you're not going to be selecting the mayor every year. The voters will select the mayor every 2 or 4 years. That's the only distinction that really comes up by the directly elected mayor. So thought I would throw that in because that was on my mind, and I'm sure we'll talk a lot about it on the 21st, and I will probably, if you so direct, be writing an impartial analysis that, in as plain a language as possible, says exactly what I just said to you so that the public will be aware of that before they go to the polls.
Would we still rotate the mayor pro tem position?
You still rotate the mayor pro tem. You still have that decision, whether you do that on an annual or biannual basis, whatever you want to do. But yes, that the mayor pro tem position is selected by the council.
And they don't get a car either.
Damn. I'm assuming there's a condo involved, though, right?
All right, let's look at the roles of the city council members. Generally, these are roles that apply to all five. I said earlier the distinction between the various roles. As we said, the mayor is just another council member with these additional ceremonial and procedural roles and duties. Okay, the roles of city council: stay informed, be responsive to constituents and their concerns, hire the city manager and city attorney and evaluate their performance, provide direction as a body to the city manager regarding city operations, approve contracts, budgets, create policy, focus on and keep to policy issues, ask questions about agenda items prior to city council meetings so they can get their questions answered in advance of the meetings, represent the city on outside committees and boards, manage the organization, including the hiring and evaluating. I'm sorry, that's the city manager. That's it for city council. Questions on city council?
Tim, on asking questions on city council meetings, would that include public and noticed committee meetings?
Yes, from an efficiency standpoint, it will help staff if we know what questions you want answered in advance. So to the extent that you can, as you look through your agenda packets, whether it's for a council meeting or for a committee meeting, if you can let staff know, I've got these questions, or I'd like to have this information available, we'll operate a whole lot more efficiently. You can dispense with business in one meeting instead of multiple meetings. And it looks better to your constituents. They don't have to come to multiple meetings in order to have their issues heard or to understand what the government is doing. Now, having said that, I think this is also a good one to bring up the point that as we look at these rules of protocol, and as I started at the beginning, we really want to put this on council. You guys need to enforce this on each other. We as staff, and I think each of you have found that it's not an efficient use of government to try and use these as a sledgehammer to force individuals to conform in every instance. These are your protocols. These are your expectations, your ideals, your norms. All of those terms would contemplate that there are exceptions. There are times when a deviation is appropriate, or there are times when you see the straying, the deviation may be becoming more consistent or may not be appropriate. And that's when you can say, rather than, wait, point of order, you've got to do this differently. Well, wait a minute, Council Member X. I think our norms say we shouldn't be doing that. Maybe we could not do it in the way that we've been doing it here and get back to our norms. A much more efficient way of doing it rather than bringing everything to a standstill while we debate, you know, hard rules that, you know, require strict adherence. We're not looking for strict adherence. When we talk about asking questions, there's no way that you can ask all of your questions. The expectation is that when the public comes in and makes a presentation to you, they start asking questions, that's going to spur some questions in your mind that you didn't pick up as you read the packet. Well, obviously, you couldn't have asked us that question in advance. You could ask that to us now. So there's an application. There's a rule of reason in the application of all of these things. But these are a norm. It's an ideal. It's an expectation. You should approach your business for a council meeting or a committee meeting with the idea of, if I want this to be efficient, if I want the government to be efficient, if I want to be able to move things along, if I want projects to be done sooner, I want questions to be answered sooner, help us by bringing your questions so that we can get those answers to you sooner. You can make your decisions sooner. We can implement them sooner. We work together in doing those things. So all of those ideals work towards that goal. Okay. Let's talk about the city manager, role of the city manager. To manage the organization, including the hiring and evaluating of city staff, manage the finances of the city, solve problems in a timely manner, keep the council informed, and answer questions from the council. Do the right things right.
Let's parking lot that.
Staff agrees with your idea to parking lot that one.
I think we probably all agree on that one.
Seems like a good norm if we did what it meant.
Just for the record, I always do the right things right.
The right things right.
I suppose we want to do the other things right too, but okay. Work with other agencies, stay informed about other agencies and external issues, and build relationships. Stay on top of state and federal government laws and regulations. Maintain a safe environment for employees. I'm thinking those are our city manager roles. Any other questions? Anything else you'd like to put on the parking lot on those?
Do you think we need to expand on maintain a safe environment for employees? I mean, we're talking about tiles not falling out of the roof, or are we talking about a safe place to work? And
I probably should let the city manager jump in, but you know, this is what we were wanting to do here. Let me explain what I understand our understanding of this is, and Michelle can correct me because if she has a different understanding, that's the understanding that matters.
Right.
Is to provide a safe work environment, primarily for the employees, but also for the public, for the council, for the people that are coming here and participating in the governmental processes.
And I would define safe as not only safe from hazards, like in the building or in the grounds or whatever, but also safety in terms of training, safety in terms of adhering to our personnel rules that cover a variety of things from violence in the workplace to, different types of conduct, harassment or retaliation. So all those types of things would go into the definition of safety, not just is there a trip and fall hazard in a hallway or something like that.
That's what I was getting at. I'm assuming that's what we meant, but okay.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, and as the law evolves, a lot of the training that we're mandated to do goes into these other areas beyond the physical environment.
Sure.
The physical environment should be a relatively easy thing to address. It isn't always as easy as you would think, but everybody generally knows, okay, this just needs to be addressed from a physical environment. But it's you know, protecting the people in the conduct and things along those lines that becomes a bigger issue, and the law is really getting involved in that and telling us we need to do training on protecting our employees in the workplace. And we look at that, extend that out to beyond just our employees.
Maybe you should say that.
I should say?
Excuse me, maybe it should say that.
Okay.
Instead of just say maintain a safe environment for employees, because you've touched upon the public, you've talked about the work environment, so it's it's a little more inclusive than that might lead people to believe.
Okay, good. We'll put that on the list, and we'll look at wordsmithing that a little bit later.
I'd like to add one other thing to the parking lot, too, on just to redefine on the first page, keeping the council informed and answer questions. Those are two different and distinct issues.
Okay, we'll put that on the list and look at how we can improve that. Okay, anything else on city manager? All right, let's jump into the city attorney. We'll just pass over this one, no problem. Okay. Defend the city and protect the city from liability. Advise the city council on protecting the city's interests. Write or review ordinances and contracts. Provide advice to staff, council, commissions on practical as well as legal issues and their possible consequences. Advocate for the council's policy decisions. Keep the council informed about pending legislation and cases that could affect the city. Provide advice to council members who sit on boards and committees.
Shouldn't we? I mean, we outsource a lot of this because we don't want to have a whole office full of attorneys. Shouldn't we add something in there about supervise outside legal help or something like that?
Okay, we'll put that on the list.
It's on the next page.
Oh, I thought you were done.
You would think so. I get three slides, and I don't think anybody else got three slides. So, okay.
See, I read ahead.
I just thought of something that I didn't think of before. So, Mr. Mayor, if you don't mind me jumping in here. The item about keep council informed about pending legislation, that's also something that the city manager's office does as well. So I think it would be appropriate to have it in both city manager's role and city attorney's because we cover different things, but we do both touch on legislation from time to time.
Makes sense.
That would be a good one to add. I don't want to keep throwing things up while Valerie's writing and see if she can get a hand cramp. It might be good, just as Michelle was mentioning that, one of the roles that Michelle and I do, and I think has been an expectation, but it's not on the list for both the city attorney and the city manager, is the collaborative role that we have. And so that you may want to consider adding something along that that recognizes that collaborative role. It's been good with the individuals you have in the offices now, but you want to have something that covers no matter who the individuals are in the offices. So Valerie will put that in. We can talk about that later if that's something you want to add on. Okay, the third slide on the city attorney, provide advice to council on conflicts of interest. And just clarify on this that if you have ever received advice on conflict of interest from the city council, you'll be told that I'm not advising you as my client. My client is the city council, not you as an individual. And if you want advice that the state is going to recognize, they won't recognize my advice. Go get your own attorney. Go to the Fair Political Practices Commission and get their advice. Those are the kinds of things. So although we provide advice, we'll help you walk through the conflict rules, help you understand what they are. Ultimately, those decisions that you make are going to be yours. And you're going to have to not just take a bottom line advice from us. You're going to have to understand how we got there and make sure you're comfortable with those decisions. Because ultimately, you're going to be individually accountable for those decisions. We didn't want to put all of that in as a role. Advise the Planning Commission, hire outside legal counsel as needed. If the Mayor Pro Tem would, like you talked about supervising, so we can put that on there.
Well, I think we do depend on you to. We don't speak their language, so we depend on you to make sure that they're doing their job right. So,
okay. I agree. Supervise should be in there.
Yeah. And why are we specifically only saying the Planning Commission? Don't you advise all the commissions?
Although it really doesn't seem that way, we adopted these norms quite a while ago, You've been active in creating boards and commissions since we adopted those. That's a good catch. We can expand that out. And yes, we do provide advice. Yeah. Not all of them do we staff at all of their meetings, sure. But we work with the staff that does support them, mm-hmm. And either on an as-needed basis or depending on the boards and commissions, we do provide legal counsel to sit with them to deal with issues as they come up.
Yeah, during the meetings. Assume. I hope so.
Okay. That's the city attorney. Now we're going to get into an introduction to the procedures. And these are the different topics that we have under the procedures. Communications, requesting information from staff, consent calendar items, procedure to place an item on the agenda, preparing for council meetings, order of discussion and motions, decorum, and Brown Act. I go through that just to say that this is the way that council decided to group these together and gives us kind of a roadmap of how we're going to move through these. And if from a logical standpoint it doesn't make sense, we can revisit that if you'd like. Wait, there's more. Terms of appointments, email and other electronic communication, verbal reports from standing committees, performance evaluations of city manager and city attorney, public comments at council meetings, handling of city council mail, and use of city letterhead. I think that's it.
Is that it?
Okay, those are the categories. So now we're going to go through each of those categories and see what procedures you have in place. On communications.
Those are the categories. Question?
The city manager is responsible for ensuring things get done and therefore should be informed about communications between council members and staff. Staff will provide timely feedback on responses to issues and resolutions to citizen complaints. And again, we're using the same approach to this. If council has any questions or clarification as to how staff is implementing any of these, let us know. If there's anything that you want to discuss further, let us know and Valerie will put them up on the list. Council members should refer citizen complaints and constituent issues to staff. Emails from a council member to staff should typically be directed to a department head and not lower level staff unless other staff are designated on some task.
On the ones you're going through now, if we have a question to parking lot, that's where you throw them in?
If you have a question on how it's working, how we understand that, how we're putting it in practice, probably good to ask that now. If you have a thought you want to change something or discuss how that's working, then we'll throw it on the parking lot.
I'd like the parking lot then the procedure to place an item on the agenda.
We're going to come to those.
We're going to come to them later.
Yeah, okay. There's a whole category that addresses those, and we actually have it on our parking lot already.
Tim, I'd like to put something on the parking lot on staff will provide timely feedback on responses to issues and resolutions to citizens' complaint. How fast? Discussion on that.
Okay. Valerie's capturing that. Emails. Nope.
I think we're on the last one.
When a council member sends an email to a staff member, the council member should also send a copy to the city manager. And I can tell you what my email box looks like, and the city manager's is probably, it's a large multiple of that. But that's the only way we can do our jobs, is if we get the communication, and we spend lots of hours, and usually late hours, waiting through those. And that's what we need from you, mm-hmm. so that we have that opportunity. Council members will provide information to the city manager to be distributed to the entire council when they have pertinent information. Example, information from an outside committee. Okay, those are the communication procedures. Anything else that you want to add on a communication procedure that you can think of right now? If not, we're going to move on ahead to the next category, requesting information. Only the city manager may provide direction to city staff, which includes asking staff to research an issue or do any work on a matter. A council member may request information from staff through the department head or the city manager that is readily known by staff and for which no research is required. In other words, can you give me a copy of the application packet for X? Something that they can go to the counter and pull or they have, we just can make a copy of that for you. I think that's the general idea there. When a council member needs assistance from staff in relation to an outside board or committee, he or she will go through the city manager for such assistance. Okay, city council items. The agenda for the city council meetings will be determined collaboratively by the mayor and city manager and or their designees. There are two methods by which a council member can request that an item be placed on a council agenda. Number one, at the end of a council meeting during council comments, a council member can raise a topic and ask for another council member to support it being on the agenda. If he or she gets the second vote, then the topic is placed on a future agenda for discussion. That's what we typically do. But your procedures also provide for number two. Two council members can advise the city manager that they are both interested in a topic being placed on the agenda. Council members wishing to place an item on the agenda will provide information about the topic on a form provided for this purpose. Staff, through the city manager, will provide information to the council about the topic and advise on the amount of work that would be involved in researching the item. It will not be a full staff report at this time, but rather be minimal information for the purpose of providing pertinent information that will assist the council in determining whether to direct additional work to be done. If the council decides to move forward, then the appropriate level of staff research will be done to bring it back to the council for full discussion. I think this would be one where staff would say, we understand the protocol, but we've probably not been as strict in adhering to this. We tend to want to provide you with more information when it's requested. And there's an issue that arises with these things from the standpoint of we want to be efficient in not having multiple meetings if we can avoid it. So if we think we can dispose of this by providing you the information, get the decision and move forward and put this behind us, staff wants to be able to do that. Eliminate items from coming to multiple. That seems to promote efficiency. But by the same token, there's an allocation of resources. And as every single council member knows, you've been told when you've asked us where something you've asked for is in the process, well, we're moving as fast as we can because we have limited resources. So if we pull off resources to research something that a majority of the council hasn't authorized, that's not available for something else that has been authorized. So there's an efficiency paradox in this one that the council has tried to walk down. And this is one that staff has asked for you to discuss a little bit further when we get into the discussion standpoint.
If I might have a word on that. I thought that this was the rules, regulations that are in place now.
That's correct.
But is this about filling out a form provided for this purpose to put something on the agenda? I thought we were just doing that with the council comments.
You have the point is you have two options. One option, which is in my recollection, 99 if not 100% of the time, has been exercised by having the discussion under council comments. You do have another procedure. I can't recall it ever, maybe once, where it was exercised, where two council members went to the city manager and said, we'd like this to be placed on an upcoming agenda. And in those instances, we should have a form for you so that we can know what it is you're looking at, and we should bring that back to council on an agenda which says, okay, here's the issue, here's the quick topic, quick information. If that's not enough to provide to answer your questions, council, full council, does the majority of council authorize staff to spend this amount of resources to provide additional information? It's a procedure that's in place. We have not had an opportunity to exercise that.
I thought this was actually one of the points of this whole session we're doing here, was to incorporate or transition to a system where we only filled out a form rather than discussed it during council comments.
As I said, staff has identified this as one that we'd like to revisit because as we see, council identified these two and we're not doing that and staff hasn't done fully what we should have been doing, providing a form. City manager's got a form that she'd like for you to consider and a different approach. So yes, when we get into the deliberation, how we want to change it, staff's got some suggestions for you to consider if you'd like to change that approach.
Well, can we put the northwest corner of the parking lot and apply it to this issue here?
Yeah, it's already on our list, but we can't. In fact, it's already on there. Placing an item on the agenda, number 29, the last line in green there. I can see it from here. I don't know if you can see it from there, but it's but it is on the parking lot.
We need a bigger parking lot. Okay, thank you.
That's when we move outside. That's when we move outside.
Yes, maybe.
Yes, we are going to talk about. We do have that on the parking lot. We will talk about that. Okay. Continuing with the agenda items, instances may occur in which a council member suggests that an item for the council agenda that would be better dealt with in the regular course of business. When that occurs, the city manager or city attorney will so inform the council. We've had an opportunity, a number of them, relatively recently, where council said, hey, we want to talk about this or we want to know what's going on with this. And usually Ms. Green, occasionally myself, we're on top of that. We'll provide you with written information or we're on top of that. We're going to take care of that. There's no need to burden another council agenda and take the staff resources to prepare a council item for that discussion. So we tend to let you know those situations which can be handled, your concerns can be handled without putting it on an agenda. Okay, those are the agenda setting procedures. Procedures for meeting preparation. The council meeting binders will be available to council members on the afternoon of the Wednesday prior to the council meeting in order to give council members time to carefully review all of the reports and ask their questions. It's a goal, and I think the city manager has been really good about meeting that goal from the time that council asked that this be put into our procedures. If you were on council prior to that time and you recall how late some of those agendas came out, we've made light year leaps in that, and we're continuing to look at ways that we can improve that. Just in the last 6 months, we've put in a computerized system that helps us more efficiently prepare agendas. So there are things that are happening that are there. And of course, having hard and fast rules like a Wednesday afternoon, a week, 2 weeks may not be enough with some of the packets we give you. If you get the full budget and if you want to look at every page in that, that's going to take a lot of time. Some of our meetings are relatively brief and have a lot of presentations with not a lot of reports, and you're going to blow through it in an hour or so and know everything that's on the agenda in detail. But this works as a general rule. It works for us. We'll want to hear from you if that Wednesday afternoon works for you as a general rule for having. Does that adequately provide you with the time that you need to handle most of your council agendas in preparing for the meetings?
On those of us that use the iPad, we don't get it till Thursday. Although when the agenda goes out and the public notice, you can actually get the agenda through that document.
Through the email, yeah.
Through the email, but I can't get it onto my iPad yet. So do we need to parking lot this to discuss to add that in, or is that just a system fix that staff can take care of?
I would say that's going to be a technology issue and is best handled by staff. Hearing that, and I think staff is aware of that, we'll be sensitive to that and look for ways that we can improve that and get that out. I think that my experience is that although we have a Wednesday afternoon goal, expectation, a lot of times the staff that's going to need to be doing that is here making copies and everything late into the evening, and it requires a separate process, separate procedure to actually get that loaded into the iPad program. But we can put that in and work on making sure that we get that out timely as well.
I mean, when they load it on the public notice, it's there. It's just not on for us to be able to access. And
our city clerk can talk briefly about the three main stages of that publishing process. Just for council's information.
Mayor, members of the council, yes. Wednesday, when we have the packet, we are producing that packet, both the hard copy. When we send the email notification out to council, letting them know the packets are ready. It's just the hard copies. The following Thursday morning is when we have to follow a different process where we take the electronic documents and load them into our program. Therefore, when we send the email out saying that the City Council is going to have a meeting on X date, that's when the entire electronic packet is available and you could see it on your iLegislate. So we'll work hard to hopefully move up the time where it'll be ready a little bit earlier that Thursday.
Thank you. No need to put it on the parking lot.
Thank you. As I look at the clock, as I would expect, this is about the end of my time that was allocated. I'm a little bit more than halfway through, but I think I'm going to move through the rest of these slides a little bit quickly, so don't hesitate to stop me if you have questions. Also, on meeting preparation, council members will ask their questions on the agenda reports at least by noon on Monday prior to the council meeting. I think we have a suggestion on that. The purpose of this is to enable staff to fully answer the questions and be most prepared for the council meeting. When possible, staff will answer the questions prior to the meeting, although it is understood that council members may wish to ask questions at the meeting in order to inform the public. The goal is no surprises, either from staff or from council members about agenda items or questions. The public and City Council need completed staff work on agenda reports, and staff needs to know what questions the council has so that they can fully answer them. As we talked about earlier, there are going to be questions that come up on the fly, and clearly you won't be able to provide that. If we want to keep the public informed, we want to have an efficient system, the more time that staff has to have the information and prepare answers, the better answers you're going to get, and the better informed the public's going to be.
Tim, I'm just wondering if there's any way that I know it would be really also very helpful if the public in their emails to us, we could get them the day before. It's really hard when we get them at the dais. We can't control what they do, but can we encourage them in some way to get their responses to or questions to us at least the day before?
Okay. Valerie, could you put up under communication distribution of public comments, and we'll talk about that. A tentative agenda projection report will be provided in order to advise the council and staff about future agenda items. Order of discussion. This is rules of order. Order of discussion and motions. The council has adopted Rosenberg's Rules of Order Revised, which are to be followed for council meetings. The following order of discussion and motions will be followed. Presentation, questions from the council, and then the public testimony. Then the discussion of the issue, the motion, and discussion on the motion, and vote. Let me give you two things on this. First, as I mentioned earlier, my general thought on rules of order. Even adopting it here, these are not jurisdictional rules. In other words, if council doesn't strictly adhere to those, somebody can't come back and sue us because we didn't follow our own rules. We do have the rules. We want to follow them. They're an efficient procedure. It's what council expects. So we want to be able to follow those. But since it's not a legal issue, I'm not going to be jumping up every time and say, no, you can't ask that question. You have to wait until later to ask that question. There's a lot of presumed magic words, dropping of the gavel and opening and closing and you know, those aren't magic words from, you know, maybe I should say that, whisper that, but they're not magic words. They're not the kinds of issues that a judge is going to invalidate the decision. There are a couple of things that this does help us avoid that really are legal issues, and when we get to those issues, I tend to speak up and will try to help guide the council through. From the council, a couple of things that I think is particularly helpful. One, we get the presentation from staff, the questions from the council. What you really should be asking at that point in time are clarifying questions. You said this. Tell me what you meant. Tell me, do you have this information, additional information? It should avoid questions which are, in reality, deliberations. You know, and it doesn't save it when it says, I disagree with you. I think this is really a bad idea. What do you think about that? That really didn't translate it into a question. You're deliberating. You're telling the other council members what you think, how you're going to vote, and you haven't even heard from the public. The fact that you haven't heard from the public is what gets you in legal problems. You want to make your decision based upon full public input. If we're having a public hearing, The expectation is you're not going to deliberate, you're not going to start making your decision until you have all of the evidence. How would you like to be the defendant in a court trial, and at the end of the prosecution's case, the judge goes, well, that about wraps it up. Defense, did you really want to say anything? You wouldn't feel very good. But that's when counsel starts saying, you know, I've come to a conclusion, and you got people who took time out to come and sit here and give you their thoughts, and you said you got your mind up before you've heard from them, that's the way they feel. They feel like the defendant who the judge has said he's got his mind made up before he's even heard from them. So we want to just limit that first questioning period to clarifying. Make sure all the information is out. Make sure if there's points that weren't covered that they get covered. Bring the information forward so that you, when you deliberate, but also the public, knows what all the information is, and you can have a dialogue that's particularly helpful.
All right. Are you taking it upon yourself the responsibility to remind a council member that they're putting forth a position on this before the public has been heard?
Well, that's what I'm doing right now.
I know you're doing it now. Will you do it during a council meeting? Is there some way you can do that without offending the parties?
That depends on the party.
Yeah.
I want to do that in as gentle a manner as possible. A couple of things that really help me do that job. Yes, I will do that. A couple of things that really help me in doing that. The chair, the mayor, in running the meeting, should be very cognizant of that. And when the mayor asks for questions, when the mayor can incorporate, are there questions on the staff's presentation? Are there questions for clarification? Putting that disclaimer out there really helps. Having other council members say, well, I think we may be moving on to deliberation. Perhaps we should hear from the public first. I think I've heard each of you at some point in time say that. Those are all things, ways that you can help me, because it doesn't look good for any of us when the city attorney comes in and says, no, council member, you have to stop talking now. You know, it looks like I've used a heavy hand and interfered with the process. Well, I'm really not. I'm just trying to put it at the right time in the right place and to make a legally defensible decision. But as necessary, I will help guide that. And there have been occasions where I've said, Mr. Mayor, I think this might be a good time for us to hear from the public or something along those lines. Tried to say it as innocuously as possible. But when you hear words like that from your colleagues or from myself or from one of the other staff members, keep in mind that the goal is not to silence you, but to remind you that the public has a role in this and they have a role before you start making your decisions.
Okay. I certainly understand that and agree with that. This kind of raises the question, though, as to when the public testimony goes in. We had the situation we had with the bike path. We received an intelligent, lengthy letter from Michael Issa on this subject, and it seemed to me at the time it was better if he went before and brought up the points he wanted to discuss before counsel started get into the question phase, because, you know, there are obviously many perceptive members of the audience there, of our constituents, that might inform some of the questions that we have. And it does, as you say, it gives the public its due. And I understand what you're saying about questions of staff versus deliberations, but we should do the public testimony right after the presentation.
No. That's certainly a possibility. With doing that, you're going to be always be legally defensible. Some of the public, you know, may feel a little bit frustrated when they ask a question that once they hear staff's, you know, or hear the explanatory questions, they realize, oh, that was a dumb question. I just wasted everybody's time. I wouldn't have asked that if I'd known, you know, that that's not before the city or whatever. So there's a balance, but in doing that, you always have that. The other thing I would mention is that, and this goes a little bit deeper, these are particularly important for public hearings. And why a lot of times I won't jump in is because it's not a public hearing. There's not a due process requirement that's there, so we're really not getting into a defensibility issue. With the item that you talk about, that's a presentation. No action is going to be taken, so you can't take any action that violates somebody's due process. Having said that, the mayor as chair can certainly look at these issues and controls the procedure, controls the agenda. If you see those things coming, any of you when you're sitting in the center seat, if you see it in advance and you've got any questions, don't hesitate to come down to me during the break or before we start and say, hey, I'd like to take this one out of order. Is that going to create any problems? And we can talk about it, and you can move through that and say, hey, there's one comment here that I think is going to help inform how we move through, and so I want to do that. That's your prerogative. That's a chair's prerogative in running the procedure of the meeting. And in a situation like that where you're doing a presentation, it's not going to create any kind of legal concerns by doing that. The other thing I would say is that, I'm not sure why we got onto two pages with this, you start with the questions from the council. Those are questions of clarification. It's the discussion of the issue. Before you get to the discussion of the issue, this largely follows Rosenberg's, what I'm familiar with and what I was trained on. Let me say it that way. I'm familiar with Rosenberg's as well. What I was trained with, what I was familiar with in other organizations would be to specify that discussion of the issues is, and you'll usually hear the mayor saying this, staff, do you have any comments or responses to anything that the public said? And there's an opportunity for council to, well, hey, this, they stimulated something here. You didn't respond when we asked. Now, let me particularly ask this. Let me reiterate their question because I want to know the answer to that. It's all an information gathering phase. And that's what you want to remember. At one point, you're in an information gathering phase. Eventually, you're going to get out of the information gathering phase, and you're going to go into the deliberation phase. What I'm used to is having a motion first, and then you have a deliberation. You have a decision, not a fact gathering, but a decision process on debating the motion. We have the discussion of the issue, and it has been very helpful for us. I think it's worked well in Goleta, and it's consistent with Rosenberg's rules, is that we have a rather robust discussion of the issues, and through that, see if there's a council consensus that's out there. The point that I would make is that probably somewhere in that discussion of the issues, there ought to be a clear differentiation between the fact gathering. Okay, we're done gathering facts. Now we need to start deliberating. Start seeing where everybody is. Start seeing, you know, what the decision is. If you could differentiate those from a legal standpoint, you're always going to be good. How you divide up those and what order those go in on either side of that is not going to be a problem. You know, whether it's a dropping of the gavel, when you close the public hearing, that's really what you're saying. We're done taking in information. We're no longer in a fact gathering. We're transitioning. Now we're going to go into a decision process. We're going to start deciding this issue. And so don't be giving us any more information. And we'll probably make a note because I know from personal experience, staff needs additional training on that as well. Because staff, when you get into deliberations, there's a lot of staff people that want to jump in and participate in that and give you more information because it's clear you don't have all of the information. It's not proper for them to participate in that manner. Now, as you know, we're going to stop the decision-making process, reopen the window to take some additional information. We didn't get all the information. We're going to reopen the public hearing for the purpose of taking this testimony, taking the staff's testimony. Staff needs to understand that they're a witness, they're testifying, they're not deliberating. They're not one of the council members that's helped making the decision. They're informing so that you can make the decision. If we get those ideas, those distinctions clear, we're going to have not only a legally defensible. Legally defensible is down here. We're talking about now goals and ideals. So we want to strive up here where the public has a real high confidence that the decisions are being made by the people that elected them, that it's transparent, and that the public has an opportunity to participate in that decision-making process. And, you know, legally defensible is down here, but we want to strive up here to meet those goals that we talked about at the outset. So that's where some of this comes about, and that's why the elaboration from my perspective of how these things are to work may or may not be useful for you.
Now, the discussion of the motion, that is specifically related only to the motion, right?
Correct.
Okay, that's a question I should be asking specifically after a motion is made. Is there any discussion of the motion before we vote on it?
Right.
Yeah, because sometimes we have complicated motions.
That you do, and you're very good from a procedural standpoint in terms of amending motions. modifying motions and making sure that you get a second on that. This council is very good, does not need a lot of direction on dealing with complex motions. And I think that owes a lot to the fact that a lot of the deliberation takes place before the motion is put forward. If you want to go to the formal, you know, Roberts rules or one of the more formal rules, you don't debate something until you have something to debate. So you have to have a motion out there and you're debating the motion. Well, that's not the way our council approaches things. It's a much more efficient process than what we do. And so a lot of times all the discussion takes place and we know where, you know, the majority or supermajority or unanimity of the council is. So by the time you make the motion, there's not a whole lot left to say. It's just to take the vote, but you need to do that. And that's one of the other points where I will jump in to make sure, number one, do we have a motion? Do we have a second? But here's what, you know, here's what staff understands. Do we have this right? Can we be clear about what that motion is? More than anything else, I would say that's my role as the attorney. The procedural issues are important sometimes. But what you decide needs to be clear, not only for the judge someday, but much more importantly for staff who's going to be carrying it out. And so I will be jumping in a lot of times and frustrating you because you're ready to vote, and I'm like, can we get a clarification on that? We want to make sure we understand exactly what it is that you're asking. So from a legal standpoint, I will jump in at that point. Haven't had to do that as much lately.
Are we going to discuss this later, or is this for discussion now?
I was, although extensively, hoping to just discuss what we have done. If you would like to, if you have questions about let's do it differently or let's talk about doing it differently, then we should parking lot and put it on for later. Otherwise, I'm looking to be done with it.
Let's parking lot, because I think this is really important that we have a set process that we all follow. So the public is comfortable with it, and we're comfortable with it, whoever's the mayor.
Okay. With that, as I said, I was going to move quickly, and then I didn't. decorum. Well, the city council is in session. Everyone is expected to respect decorum and allow the meeting to proceed in an orderly manner. And not only to congratulate the council, but to congratulate our citizenry, we don't have disruptive problems on a very frequent basis. It's pretty rare that somebody's going to come in and try and disrupt our meetings, and council has always handled those with a great deal of grace, and you're to be congratulated for that. Any person who is disorderly or who persistently disrupts the business meeting may be asked to leave the meeting. At such time, the mayor may call a recess. Just the aside, my advice has always been that's the easiest thing. Don't ever engage them. You're just going to create more problems. Okay, we're going to take a recess until we can calm things down. Council steps out of the room. The sergeant at arms will talk to the person, try and calm them down. If they don't, they'll escort them out. If needed, law enforcement may be called to maintain order and decorum at council meetings. As a general rule, we do have a resource deputy here. City Council's intent is to always follow the Brown Act as required and in order to foster transparency in local government.
If I might ask a question on that, the previous issue there on decorum. If we have not had any instances that I know of hate speech coming through our podium here, but we have received hate speech in letters, though. If you hear something that you think is hate speech, will you intervene or make a motion over here saying, you know, let's go recess or something?
Yes, if I feel like it's a violation of the law. Let me give you my 2 cents on that as well. You're in dangerous territory. There is very few opportunities where First Amendment private or speech rights, free speech rights, are guaranteed than in the redress to the governing body. What they say up here, you know, your best to rather than react to what they say, you look at things that are completely neutral, like 3 minutes. So you endure whatever it is for 3 minutes. Red light goes on, you're done. Did we put a button? Well, we got a button up there for the mayor. Okay. If they don't think they're done, when you say they're done, you got a button, and then nobody else hears what they have to say. And if they won't leave the podium, that's when you, okay, we're gonna take a recess before we call the next speaker. Okay. Anytime that you take somebody for whatever it is that they're saying and stop them from talking or hit the kill switch before the end of the 3 minutes, you may have dealt with the problem that was existing in those 3 minutes. My experience on multiple occasions, personally observing this, you now have months of this and other people coming down and talking about that one instance where the mayor got up and silenced free speech rights. Rather than saving 3 minutes, now you created, for almost every instance, you give them that. This gets to be the time, you know, where is it not protected? Where's the traditional, you look at the legal definitions, you know, it's the shouting fire in a crowded theater. It's where you're going to cause pandemonium. Not where you're going to offend somebody because your opinion is different. Everybody gets to say their piece, even if we disagree with it vehemently, even if it's hateful, even if it's, you know, you shouldn't be reelected. Nobody wants to hear that. But, boy, you don't want to be silencing somebody on something along those lines. You take their 3 minutes.
Yeah, no, I fully understand that, but we had a situation here where groups were being vilified that unrelated to anything that had transpired in our community, and people were singled out as saying, in effect, these people are dangerous. Well, if we get that rhetoric, doesn't that fall under some sort of prohibition there when other groups are drawn into it for a disapprobation?
Those are opinions that they hold, and they have a right to say, and particularly when we've provided a forum to say that. Now, a couple of things that you can do in that. You don't look at it because, you may want to act because of those particular circumstances, but where our rules allow are in a couple of instances. One is where it appears on the agenda. Okay? If we're talking about an item, okay, you need to confine your items to talking about this item on the agenda. We're not talking about that, and we're talking about this. That's a fair opportunity to rein them in. If it's under the public comments, then there's a much broader range, but it still has to be something that's within the jurisdiction of the city. And this gets to another item that we'll probably be talking about later, is what items are we going to put in front of the city? Because when the city undertakes to take a policy position on broad social issues or other issues outside of our jurisdiction, then it opens up that window. Now anybody can come in and really talk about any social issue because we've put that, the council, has put those things within our realm. If we say, no, we're going to focus ourselves to doing the business of the city and dealing with those things that directly affect our residents, then when somebody comes up and wants to talk about some social justice issue that they're really offended about, it provides us with an opportunity to say, no, that's not within the jurisdiction of the city. That's not something that we take on. You're going to have to go to a different forum to put that message out. So with that distinction, now if somebody comes in and vilifies somebody, we don't like this group that's developing in town. You know, we think these people are pillaging the city, whatever those comments might be. But it's something that's clearly within the city's jurisdiction. You're gonna let them have their speech. Now, you have a great deal of power, and you have to be very judicious in the way that you exercise it, but you're far better off letting them have their say, because that's what our society is built upon. When they're done and their mic is dead, now you have mic. And you can have a rebuttal that they don't get to rebut. We disagree with those comments. You know, that's not the position of the city. The city, you know, respects all of the people that are residing in our city or that are doing business, whatever those might be. You don't want to go on and address it broader, but it is appropriate to make a comment, particularly from the mayor, when comments are made that are very inconsistent with the norms of the city. To clarify, those comments are the individual. We respect the speaker's right to hold those opinions and express those opinions. We do not agree with them. We do not endorse them. That's about all you want to say. And then you move on. You've kind of gutted any impact that they may have had. And as I say, be very judicious. Be very cautious in the way that you do it. And once you start out, it's hard to stop talking. So you want to be very cautious in doing that, but you do have those powers. And those are our appropriate means of addressing it. That help?
Yeah, it does. Particularly, your comments about taking the speaker and keeping him to the issue at hand and on areas that are in our domain for this discussion, and to the opportunity to say, this is not an opinion of the city council, it's not an opinion of the city, this is an individual who expressed his or her own opinions and is to be considered as just that, their opinion. So, and I'll be looking, if this happens, you know, and I guess you know what event in the past I'm referring to here, I'll be looking down to you and I'll follow those procedures. But at some point, if you go like this, you know, okay, I'll say recess time, huh?
We can do that. We'd be glad to assist the council. I would say that as with the rules that you have, keeping the public from straying into areas that are not within the jurisdiction of the city, holding strictly to the three-minute time limit or whatever, you want to make sure that you're even-handed in the way that you approach that. You know, because you have those tools, but if you abuse those tools and only use them when somebody's speaking that you disagree with, then you're going to get in trouble. That's when the court's going to come down on you.
I'll just make a quick comment. I don't know if it was you, Tim, that gave a presentation on handling just this topic, or it was David Valadez. But there was a mention that also what you could do is after the 3 minutes and you have a recess, the mayor or one council member could go up to the person and say, if you'd like to meet with me at another time to discuss this. Sometimes they just want to be heard, and that's helpful. So I remember that being an option. It's a choice that
certainly any of those things are available to the council members, and I agree with the comment of they want to be heard, mm-hmm, which is why cutting them off before the end of the 3 minutes is particularly troubling. Okay, then we add the comment on the Brown Act. We're all going to follow the Brown Act. Appropriate methods for council members to communicate about an issue are: inform staff. If appropriate, staff may brief the entire council. Provide comments at the end of a council meeting. Place an item on a council meeting agenda for discussion. So you do have opportunities to talk to your colleagues. You don't have to ignore each other all the time. You do have opportunities to discuss.
But we can if we want to.
You can ignore each other.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, that is allowed. Appropriate methods for council members to communicate about an issue are, I didn't click. There we go. Appointments are made after each council election. These are terms of appointment. These would be appointments to council committees primarily, but it also relates to appointments on outside agencies. I'll look at Deborah and say yes. Every 2 years after the council election. So for appointments to outside bodies, when specific rules or requirements exist, those rules will be followed. So if certain agencies that give us an ex officio position, whatever their rules are, sometimes they specify it has to be the mayor or whatever, we will defer to those. A majority of the council determines appointments, with the exception of the statement before. In the non-election year, the council can also review appointments in cases where a council member would like to make a change to his or her appointment. This would not involve a review of all appointments. After a city council election, council members are asked their preference about appointments to boards and committees. City clerk creates and distributes a description of the boards and committees, terms of appointments, names of current council appointees, and if known, the likely topics for each board or committee to be addressed in the upcoming year. Anytime you do something once every 2 years, it's hard to remember what you do, other than Councilmember Bennett. He has a really good memory. But perhaps, and I think that what you've seen is, as we, in the years since we've adopted this, staff has worked on trying to normalize this and have this, and it's very helpful for us to know what your procedure is. We have less concern of what the procedure is, as long as we know what it is, so we can assist you in doing that. And I think that one of the things that it may work with the city clerk on is making sure that even if you revise these things, whatever you have in here, that we'll either get that out to you or put that out in your packet to remind you. We're not coming up with this on our own. This is what you guys decided, and that kind of helped be a reminder to all of you as to this is how we're going to approach things. These are the way we agreed to do these things.
Tim, can we parking lot the non-election year appointments?
Okay. All right, let's talk about communication. Council members should not use the reply all function on email, as this could cause an inadvertent violation of the Brown Act if other council members are included. I'm working really hard on training staff that when they send something to all of the council members, that they blind copy you so that if you inadvertently hit reply all, it doesn't inadvertently violate the Brown Act. We're getting there. We made a lot of progress on that. I have no control over the public, and a lot of times when the public wants to talk to you, they're going to talk to all five of you in the same email. So be very cautious about replying or forwarding those emails that you don't inadvertently include everybody else with your thoughts, because then the public hasn't seen that, but the rest of the council has, and that's moving on to your decision-making process. That's what the Brown Act prohibits. Email from a personal email account, text messaging, or other electronic means of communication from private accounts should be assumed to constitute a public record if the topic relates to city business. Wow, I forgot this one was in here. This has gone, a lot of case law, or not a lot, there's significant case law has come down on this issue since we came up with these, and I would say that you're on the cutting edge. It doesn't matter if it's a text message on your phone or an email on your phone or your home computer, whatever that is, it doesn't matter whether the city supported that or not. If you're doing city business, no matter where it's held, it's a public record. And that means that Deborah Lopez, the city clerk, is the custodian of that record that's on your personal computer or your phone. Think about that as you conduct business. City provides each of you with an official email account that you conduct your official city business. That's maintained on the city server, and it's a whole lot easier for us. We get a Public Records Act request to be able to assemble those documents and look through them, rather than calling you and spending hours with you searching through all of your private emails to see if there might be something that's responsive. So this was a good one. We were ahead of our time. Verbal reports. After each meeting of a council standing committee, members of those committees will provide a brief verbal report at the next council meeting. We do that, and I think we were assisting in calling out those committee meetings on the agenda, so that just as a reminder, make sure that you have that opportunity. The city's practice is to evaluate the performance of the city manager and the city attorney each year. Fortunately, you guys are very good on that one. The mayor and mayor pro tem constitute the personnel committee and take responsibility for leading the annual evaluation process. They will assess the process each year and make changes as needed. This is always a challenging one because the council wants to get to a process that is consistent from year to year, but yet every year there's a different mayor, and the mayor on that personnel committee has a better way of doing things. So we evolve, and the city manager and I both understand that that's how this works. We're more interested in making sure that we are meeting your expectations and getting your feedback and having an opportunity to talk to you about our job performance. The tools that you use, we want to make sure that they fit what your needs are. And are more interested in that than what specific tools are used. Members of the public may address the council and offer their opinions, criticisms, and support of any city decision or policy. This gets back to the mayor's comments in the discussion that we had there earlier. The council will not engage in debate with a member of the public or respond to issues, questions raised during the oral communication portion of the meeting, with the limited exception of what I just said you could do but probably shouldn't do. However, if there is a simple piece of information that can be provided to the public to respond to the question, the city manager or city attorney may do so. Largely, we're going to look to you for a cue of, do you want us to respond during the meeting, or is that something you want us to reach out to the individual after the meeting? In some cases, it may be appropriate to tell the speaker that staff will contact him or her after the meeting about his or her issue. It is expected that individuals who address the council will do so in a way that is respectful. While the public is encouraged to provide their views, it should not be done in a way that is personal, slanderous, threatening, or abusive towards the council, staff, or other individuals, such that it impedes the orderly conduct of the council meeting. This gets right back to the discussion that the mayor and I were having. Our expectation is that everybody is going to be here to be collaborating with us in governing the city. We know that not everybody is going to meet that, and so the discussion comes then, What do we do about somebody who doesn't meet our expectation, and what are our legal rights in doing that, and what are the practical consequences? And so that was the discussion we were having there. This is our expectation, and we certainly would want everybody to do that. If you see I would amend the earlier comments and see if you see a course of discussion along these lines, I'll hesitate to say if you anticipate that. It's bad to anticipate what the public's going to say. But if you see a number of speakers, if they're all wearing the same T-shirt with the same slogan on it, and they start standing up and going through something that is offending this, it may be helpful for the mayor to say, we just want to remind the public that our expectation is, and you should have this available and be able to read that, and then proceed and let them say whatever it is that they want to say. City Council mail. This is one we talked about or have the opportunity to talk about earlier, certainly with the emails that they come in. City staff will open and distribute mail addressed to the mayor or council unless a member of the council opts to have their mail provided to them unopened. All mail, opened or not, is considered a public record subject to the Public Records Act unless it is clearly personal. Clearly personal means that there's no city business at all involved. Use of the city letterhead. City will provide letterhead for individual council member use. The letterhead will be distinguished from the city letterhead in that it will only identify the individual author by name and not all members of the council. It is to be used to communicate individual positions and must clearly communicate that the contents of the letter are the views of the individual council member and not the city. This is something that the council came up with as an opportunity to help address the norm that we talked about at the beginning. It should not be assumed that a recipient will understand this solely by the use of the letterhead. If a minority position is being communicated, the majority view must be disclosed in the letter. It's not enough to say I'm speaking for myself and not the city if the city has taken a contrary position. The council has an expectation that if you're going to express your differing view, that you say, the city council has taken this position. I view whatever my personal view is. Staff can assist and advise council members regarding compliance with this policy at the request of the council member. Okay, we've got the items on the parking lot. We have some previously obtained feedback and council suggestions, but my portion is over unless you have any questions for me.
And this is the point where we suggest a break. We were actually thinking it was going to be 36 minutes ago, so I think it's even more important that we have a brief break.
I'm sure everybody would agree with that. I wanted to thank you, Professor Giles, for that very informative discussion. You did it very well.
Break.
Okay, so let's take, I think 10 minutes should be sufficient. Okay, we'll pick it up again at 10:45.
Your love, it's a melody played in a penny arcade. Yes, it's a Barnum and Bailey world, about as phony as it can be. But it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me. If you believed in me. If you believed
in me. You're here. All right, let's pick it up again with our workshop. I think Ms. Green, our city manager, are you going to initiate the second portion, or are we with Ms. Kushner?
What we're going to do next is go over proposed changes that we've identified that were in the staff report. And, you know, as we continue through the process, we'll be looking at those proposed changes and suggestions, as well as what we've got on our flip chart parking lot. Valerie Kushneroff is going to walk us through that material, and starting with proposed rule changes based on staff's recommendations that we have so far. So I'll hand it over to Valerie.
Great. Thank you. And just wanted to acknowledge that I thought Tim did an excellent job in walking through the protocols and the questions and the suggestions that you raised that are now in the parking lot. Will be very helpful as we move through this process, helpful not only for you as the elected body, but for staff as we look to these protocols for what we can expect of the council and what you expect of the city manager and city attorney. But acknowledging that it's 10:46 and we have a timeline where we need to be done at 11:50, like Ms. Green said, we are going to go through the previously identified items. And then if we have time, we will work through some of the parking lot items. And for those items that we may not likely get to today, we will continue it at another meeting so that we do address them. But the benefit of doing that as well would give us a chance to review the items that you've brought forward that we may be able to create some proposed language on and come back to you with another draft. So with that, let's start with the proposed rule change or procedure change for the item, placing an item on the agenda. As Mr. Giles indicated, there are two mechanisms for doing that right now, and neither requires a majority of council members to agree to put an item on the agenda. And in some cases, as you know, we have limited resources, and you have items that you've brought forward that you would like for us to have on an agenda sooner, but they are being displaced by items that may have been placed on an item by less than a majority of the council. So the proposed language that we have, this is the existing language. I'm not going to read through this since Mr. Giles already did that. That is the proposed language. And it indicates that there would be a form, which we've actually created a sample form for you, giving the city manager an idea of what you're looking for with your item, including maybe names and phone numbers of people you might have talked to, who might have information, what you're getting at with your item. You would bring that to the city manager. The city manager or his or her designee would give the form to the appropriate staff member to provide a short overview. In your form, you'd provide the short overview and pertinent information. And then the city manager would provide that to staff, who would come back with a short report. As Mr. Giles indicated, the mechanism right now, sometimes we want to provide so much information to you that it takes up more resources than perhaps it should at this initial juncture. So this revised procedure would give the majority of the council an opportunity to weigh in on whether or not that should be expanded upon at a future staff meeting. Ms. Green, did you want to make a comment here?
Yes, briefly. We discussed that there could be a place on the agenda separate from consent calendar, separate from the discussion action items and public hearings, where we have these council requests, because the information that staff will provide will be very minimal, just enough to give council an idea if you want to go forward with full development of an issue, a program, response to questions, or whatever it may be. So the thought was, after we get through regular business, then council would have, let's say, for example, maybe there's two or three of them on one agenda. Then you'd have time set aside to go over those brief reports related to council's requests and vote as a group on whether you want those to move forward to the next stage, to the more developed stage. Our thought was maybe that could be done right before council comments, or somewhere after the regular business is done, so we're not holding up other items and presentations and things that the public may have already come to comment or listen to.
Is that a question? Here in the way, if we set it up that way, it's going to be on the agenda. The public may want to comment on it because it's agendized. So we're going to have to provide time for that to happen, should it be listed. The other question I had was, I know that the Mayor Pro Tem and I did a request, the one on the vacation rentals that came by way of email, wasn't the form. So is there a way that we can include an email request? It's more expedient, unless we have a form that's on our...
There's templates you can build in Outlook, too. where we could just make an email template. That way we can get the necessary information.
Or we could certainly provide it, write an interactive PDF where you just type into the form and send it back to the city manager.
Okay. And the other thing is, sometimes we don't have time to do this. Maybe it's something that comes up during a meeting, and it's not really time sensitive. And maybe I go to the city attorney on this, but let's say whatever the item is, two people say, you know, I really want that to come back. But three of us say, or we can't say, we're not debating it, but three of us say, or are thinking that, well, we really don't want that to come back because it's outside our jurisdiction. Can we set it up in such way under council comments that it will require three affirmative yeses? And that doesn't mean we're voting for it. It just means we want it to come back. And that would eliminate having something come back that three people aren't going to support anyway.
The situation is that if the procedure that the council adopts, that the council is going to take a role in deciding items that are on the agenda, then that is a council decision. And if they're going to make an action on that, if they're going to make a decision with three council members, then that's going to be a decision that's going to require it to appear on an agenda and give the public an input. Whereas the procedure that we have currently, where we limit it to direction from two council members, and that's the reason it's two and not three, is you don't get into the majority, you don't get into a council decision. It's a procedural matter at that point in time. I understand it's not a decision on the substance, but by council giving itself a substantive decision in placing items on the agenda, it becomes a substantive issue. Is the public likely to be outraged on this? Probably not. Are these types of scenarios likely to come up frequently? Probably not. But you know, those are issues that the council can wrestle with. But if you get to a point where it is you're looking for a majority council decision, then you are moving into that area where the Brown Act would apply.
Okay. So this would eliminate any council comment requests on future agenda items, but would get them back on the report to see if we wanted to go further, and the report would be minimal in length. Is that what I'm hearing?
Correct. Yes.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Would the fact that your report's coming back just to see if we want to go forward, would that address Councilman Aceves' concern that it would open it up to public comment early in the process where we're not really making a decision yet, or would we really have to take public comment on something like that if we put it out there?
If you're going to be making a decision, which is what this would do, it gives us the opportunity to make a decision, you would have the opportunity. You put it on the agenda so that the public knows you're going to be making a decision as to whether or not to have a full agendized discussion of this item, and they would have the opportunity. As we talked about earlier, it can focus the discussion on the question that is before them. You know, I don't know how much. I would expect that there are a number of issues that come up in this way that the public or a grassroots, you know, wants the public to take up, and they may come and urge the council to take it up. So yes, there would be those situations where you would have public comments. I would say just to bring a point of clarification on a couple of Councilmember Seves' comments. One of this eliminating the opportunity to do this under the council comments the way that we do it currently, and addressing those emergency situations. Like we talked about at the outset, we're setting norms, we're setting expectation. These are the ideals. As there are exceptions, their council can follow those exceptions. And you know, certainly if there's something that's time sensitive, it may not meet the emergency justification to put it on an unagendized agenda that the Brown Act allows. Those are very, very restrictive. But if we need to get it on the next council agenda, we can't have a multi-step process. certainly council can you know, inform us of their concerns, and we can work with that. But that should be the exception. What we're looking at here are the ideals.
I'd like a clarification in the manner in which this is written, because it says council member, doesn't say two council members. It says council member completes an agenda, and nowhere in here does it say that it requires two council members to go forward with a written request. So which is it that's being proposed?
What you've got in writing is one. I think that staff's intention would be two, but regardless, we're looking for you. You guys make the decision, and we will wordsmith it to meet your expectation. If you'd like to maintain those two, and I think that from a staff's perspective, I think that would be our expectation. That was our intent. I think that we came up with the language of just the one. And certainly you could go that way if that's the way council would want to do it. You can go with it, you know, as it's written or as we've discussed it. They are different, but.
Well, my recollection when we had the discussion soon after I was elected, there was no procedures in place, and we established that it would come at council comments and that it would be two council persons that would make the request. And part of the rationale during that discussion, as I recall it, was that you had at least somebody that could make the motion and someone else that would be considered to, you know, make the second. And if you couldn't get that kind of support, and if it was just one council member that, because we always ask if there's anyone else that wishes to step up on this, and often you'll hear another council member, or you may hear the entire council say, oh, by the way, well, this eliminates, of course, all of that, so you don't even have an expectation as to where it might go. And my familiarity with other governmental bodies is, ironically, many of them allow any council member to put something forward, don't even require two. And I thought our system was pretty decent in that regard. I understand staff's request because they have a lot of work to do, and it's easy for us to make the requests, not so easy for you to be able to respond in a timely fashion. I get that. So if we're putting it in writing, the burden is on us. If it's truly of our interest, then, you know, we'll write it out. And that takes more time, takes more effort, maybe takes a little bit of research on our part, whatever the case may be. And I'm fine with that. I don't particularly have a problem with that. But it will have some chilling effect on the method by which we use right now. And I get that. And I think staff's supporting that chilling effect. And okay. But I still think it should be two council members at a minimum, because I don't think there's any sense to bring something forward that four people would say no on, at least if you have someone else, you know, you're a portion of the way along for something to be considered to be voted on affirmatively if you want to see a change or make a difference.
I would agree. You probably want at least two. Otherwise, I think we're going to have the opposite effect. We're going to start having a lot of things show up for requests, and they might be outliers.
My question is this a staff recommendation, or did this come from council?
My recollection is that it came from both.
Oh, okay.
The proposal came from staff. The concerns was something that we received in the feedback.
Okay. I know that you said at the beginning of your presentation that we're looking at these procedures to either make it easier. Will it be easier or harder for us to do our job? You mentioned that. I'm not sure this would make it easier for us. It seems like it would take more time. I'm trying to figure out. I understand what Councilmember Bennett just spoke to, that you know, we put a lot on staff's plate, asking for a lot of information, and you know, that other things then get put down in the list, and so I understand that problem. I did call a couple different council members in different cities, and a lot of them do the written reform and two, requesting, and then it comes back. And I sort of support that idea if it would make it easier for staff. I'm just trying to figure out what exactly are we trying to fix here with the way that we have been doing it.
The concern was raised. I'll try and restate that as best I can. I don't know that I would have used the phraseology that Councilmember Bennett did of attempting to chill the process, but I think that probably captures it. We're in a dilemma in allocation of staff resources and meeting council's expectations and timely returning on items. We want to make sure that our allocation of resources is addressing items that has a full council support, that is the most efficient way of addressing what council wants and to be able to get answers to you as quickly as possible. If with it being easy, perhaps too easy, to just, oh, hey, I've got an idea, let's go to another idea. Nobody's really spent much time, as Councilmember Bennett says, spent much time thinking about it or really contemplating what would be involved in it. You know, we've got two council members now who say, okay, staff, go do something with this. Okay, well, that's something else on our plate. And yet, the three council members may have been adamantly opposed, or when they get that, what we would put together with the one page or, you know, the real brief response, you know, the full council might have gone, no, this is way too time intensive. This may be a great idea 5-10 years down the road, but we don't want to put this on staff's plate right now because we want answers to the things we've already given them. And so it's an attempt to, narrow the funnel of ideas, moving from ideas to things that are actually on staff's plate that are allocating resources, so that we can really focus in our time on those areas where council wants movement now. And I think from my understanding that's kind of the concern that was raised, that if we get so many council requests, we've certainly had a few council meetings where we'll come away with 5, 6, 8 new items on our plate that we weren't even contemplating, and we were wondering how we were going to get the things done that we've been working on for years. And so that was a challenge.
You know, I'd like to move this forward to add the two council members, and we need to have the city manager be the triage of the ideas, because those of us been here for a while remember that new ideas come up and we realize, well, that was an old idea, but we just never moved forward on it. And I'll give you an example. We had a dog leash park, an unleashed park. Well, unbeknownst to us, staff had already done the work on it, but it never came to us. But the other issue, and this is a bigger issue of concern for me, is not only should the city manager triage the request and make sure that it fits in our strategic plan, it fits in our financial plan, but also that it doesn't just sit on the list of requests, that they move off there. Because we've seen lists on that request list have been there for years. And so there's got to be, you know, this triage also helps things move forward. So mm-hmm. I don't think, are we voting today, or are we just giving consensus to move things forward, or what are we doing?
We're asking for consensus changes, and our goal is to be able to bring back the feedback that we have in revised language for you guys to adopt in the amended rules.
Well, I agree with the program. Just add two council members.
I would agree too. I would say let's just do it via email. Then there's a trail for everybody. I mean, then I can go back through my sent email and remember what I asked you to do in the first place, and also know when and everything else. I'm looking at the form. It's a very simple form. You're not asking us to fill out a 10-page checklist.
Form or email.
Yeah, if you want, I'd prefer to do it with email. But if somebody like Councilman Bennett, who doesn't like to get on his iPad, wants to write it out, that's okay.
I can't do an email.
I do think he dissed you, though.
He did.
Okay, well, let me have a couple comments here. When I first went through this, most of my margin notes were something to the effect of, It's a mother may I thing. Spontaneity will be reduced. Another layer of bureaucracy. It's going to slow the idea. And actually, from Councilmember Bennett's comments and Mr. Giles' comments about it narrowing the funnel, it does raise the question as to whether there will be fewer ideas passing through here. And of course, you might respond, well, that's the whole idea, you know. Let's reduce the burden on staff. On the other hand, I think we have, as a council, have always responded to staff requests for more assistance when it was needed. I would rather have staff increase its ability to respond rather than reduce the input of the council on that. Let me come at that a little differently. This is something that is asked of council. So then, can we turn it around and come back to the thing that we frequently will harp on, and that is responsiveness? If we go to a form situation here, will you promise to bring it back within two council meetings? You know, let's get some accountability. I mean, we're doing this more formally. You can hone the direction of the staff that needs to see it. Will you bring it back within two council meetings if something comes up here? Because this has been an ongoing concern forever. Stuff falls through and we don't know where it is. But if we had a firm commitment from you to get back to us in two meetings, certainly that would make this more palatable to me.
I think that's it. Pardon me. I think that's achievable. Because we wouldn't be bringing back fully developed multi-page staff reports with resolutions or, you know, various attachments. It would be a much briefer response. So I think we wouldn't need as much time to prepare all that. We would be identifying issues and needed resources and things like that, but we wouldn't be developing a concept to make it decision ready. So within two council meetings is realistic.
All right. Well, that's good then. I feel better about that. And, of course, we all agree with what Mr. Giles, Professor Giles, said about the whole point of all of this, just to make us more efficient, more effective as a council. And if doing it in a forum will focus the thinking of the council people and make it easier for you to address the question, so much the better. And if you come back in a timely manner, we don't have to worry about it disappearing, and then we can get the full council input on whether we think it's a worthy subject to explore in greater depth.
I just want to clarify something. You want the city manager to come back within two meetings, but actually she'd come back to the proponents of the idea, because they may withdraw it. Not to council, because it's not going to go to council unless
was planning on coming to council with it.
Well, let's say I ask a question and I get somebody concurred with it, mm-hmm. and we find out that it's already in the process. So it doesn't need to come back to council because it's already planned to come back to council.
Okay.
Well, I think as long as that's made known to everybody that this has been addressed in another fashion, I think what we're looking for here is a paper trail, you know, a line that takes us from A to B here, and we're sure that we're getting the accountability we need. I mean, you can ask of us to hone our thinking on this and make it easier to answer the question or examine the proposal and bring it back, and then the five of us will work it over and see if we think it's viable.
I think, as Mr. Giles said, there's always going to be exceptions. So in instances where the request is related to something that's already in process, we can certainly put language in the rules here that talks to that type of instance. If it's already underway or, you know, it's a quick answer to a question, that will be provided to the requester and shared with the rest of council so everyone's aware.
If I might say this, as a compliment, you know, there doesn't seem to be much going on here that you're not familiar with. So if it comes up here, a question, you know, should we explore this? I would be surprised if you weren't aware of it, if it is going on somewhere. So I'm not sure that will be much of a problem.
Did anyone else want to comment, or do we have consensus to move forward with the procedure with two council members and a form coming back within two meetings? I'm seeing three yes. head nods, four head nods.
You have consensus.
Okay. Thank you. So the next item that we have on as a suggested new protocol is the idea of when to record meetings and workshops by video and audio video. Right now, we don't have a process, and so the question comes up when we have a workshop like this or the community center workshop as to whether or not it should be recorded and broadcast. And so we, as staff, are wondering if you would like to create a policy related to that or if you want to leave it to staff discretion.
I'll leave it, personally, I'll leave it to staff's discretion on that. I don't have a real brief for this one way or the other.
But if we're looking at transparency, wouldn't we want all our workshops that happen here to be televised?
Do I have to tell them my dreams, too?
No.
No, I mean, it's available for public comment. I mean, we itemize all these things. We agendize these meetings, right? So if people are interested, they can come. But I really don't care. You can do that if you think it works, if it's not too expensive, if it's not too much of a burden. Seems to me it'd be a burden on staff to try and do that, but I'm indifferent to whether you do it or not.
My opinion is that we publicly notice our meetings. Just make sure it says on the agenda that it will be audio taped only, or video, or televised. This is not cheap. Every time we televise this, and we got to be sensitive to our budget. So like this meeting here could have perfectly been audio taped. Then I would not have to wear a tie.
Yeah. And God help them if they're home watching this on TV right now.
So, I mean, there are those work sessions that go on for a few hours. Audio is perfect. They can it's archived. They can hear if they want to. But it's publicly noticed and they can be here if they want to.
Yeah, I agree.
So there should be a policy, yes.
There should be a policy?
Well, we need to we're going to have a protocol policy on this, right? Is that what we're asking to do?
Yes, we're asking to get consensus to add something to this document so that it's clear the expectation is already provided. Staff knows how to act appropriately, and council knows what to expect when attending one of these meetings.
Could we do something where we say it's up to staff discretion, but notify us like a week in advance so we can decide if we don't agree with staff discretion at that point?
Or clear it with the mayor.
Yeah, probably even more appropriate, clear it with the mayor. I think you guys have a pretty good feel of what should be televised and what shouldn't, especially if we're, like Councilman Aceves said, we're going to have it on audio. We're going to have it recorded. You can come in and see it if you want. And if we get a lot of push that they want to see it on television, we can change it.
Then let's do this. Let's have our policy come back, and if there's a question as to whether or not we should do it or which way we should do it, the manager should consult with the mayor and the mayor pro tem to see if they're in accordance with it. That way we can move forward.
Yeah.
If there's a question, and not staff can just go ahead and schedule it and just make the notice appropriately.
Is there a consensus on what Councilmember Aceves is proposing?
Sure. Yes.
Okay. Thank you. So the next item that we're looking at is whether to allocate presentation or agenda time for issues and topics outside the city's jurisdiction and or without a direct nexus to the city's business. And as I was listening to you discuss the earlier item about what to place on the agenda, this may play into it as far as timeliness, because sometimes you do receive requests to make a statement, sign a letter, vote on something that is outside the city's direct jurisdiction. The best example that I can give you today is the Right to Die legislation, which goes into effect today. It's not particularly a city-based issue, but it may be something the city wants to take a position on. It's outside the legislative platform, and the question has been raised as to how does the council want to handle these types of issues, and does this, do you want to allocate time on the agenda for things that are outside of the city's direct jurisdiction? So would you like to discuss a possible protocol? Again, you can leave it to going through the two council member process with the form, or what would you like to do today?
Well, I'll start off. I think we definitely need a hard and fast rule on it. I mean, when I was, the two times I was mayor, maybe you guys can speak to this also, we get papered all the time up and down the state asking our city to add our name to this and add our name to that, and it had nothing to do with anything with the city of Goleta. But yet the process is, we, and if it's not in our legislative platform, we have to bring it back and have a discussion about whether we're going to do something that has nothing to do with us. So I really think that it's easier to say we're not going to weigh in on stuff that's not within our jurisdiction. It's an easy answer because we can all respond the same way. It's when we pick and choose what we want to do, and all of a sudden any policy you have is not going to be worth anything.
Okay, I have a different opinion on that. We are parts of a whole. We are elements of a society, of a community, of a shared value system, and I think from time to time, and we don't know, I don't think we need a protocol on it. I think we can leave it kind of like it is, or use the council comments, the request for an exploration of this. But I think your compassion and choices example is a good idea. I mean, it's a good, I think it fits that type of thing should come up, and we can dismiss it if the majority of the council says, it's not in our prerogative to have an opinion on that, then we don't vote on it. But if there is an agreement, then I think we should leave it that way. Rather than say we can't do this, I think we just ought to do an up or down vote on issues that the council may feel committed to, and we'll let council decide at the time what that might be.
Well, in the essence of time, I would wholeheartedly agree with our mayor on that one. I think a lot of things are outside of our jurisdiction, but may have a direct impact on our community. So I wouldn't want to prohibit discussions.
I'm inclined to stick to the business of the city. I mean, that's what we were elected for, and I think it diminishes our impact if we start to weigh in on too many things outside of the nexus of the city. So I'm inclined to agree with Councilman Aceves.
I guess that throws it into your court, Mr. Bennett.
Actually, it doesn't, because I'm not pulsed either direction. Mm-hmm. So, I know of a jurisdiction close by that got into the nuclear free zone and all of these, very exotic and exciting things, and they comment all the time. And if you've ever been there, you can spend the first hour with people talking about everything under the sun, and I don't want to see Goleta go in that direction. But I'm not necessarily convinced that we need a policy either, because it hasn't been an issue for us. And I would love to see it continue in that fashion. So it's the old story, if it ain't broke, why fix it? And I don't think we're broke. And we haven't had to deal with those extraneous issues on an ongoing basis. If it came to that, then I would very much be in favor of just what is within the city's jurisdiction. But we haven't been confronted with that, and it's I just assume I don't see anything broken. So I don't see the need for anything more than what we're doing currently.
So just to be clear then, if a council member wants to take a position on the nuclear free zone, they'd have to fill out the form, it'd have to be sent to the city manager, and come back to us under the special portion of the agenda. Then we'd ask it to come back again, if we wanted to.
I guess that would be, if you wanted to take it that far, I would hope that the council wouldn't be so bold to do such a thing, but if they chose to do it, then that might be the time to start tightening up the issues. But as I say, up to now, that hasn't been an issue that's been presented to us.
Okay, but that would be the policy because, you know, and I think the nuclear free zone is a good example because it's going to be on the agenda. The room's going to be filled with those that want it and those that don't want it. And then we're going to position now to say whether we're going to bring it back to do a letter in favor of or a resolution in favor of whatever the recommendation is. Again, dealing with something that's outside the purview of our jurisdiction.
Mr. Mayor, if I could insert something. There are circumstances where groups approach the city, typically the city clerk's office or maybe the city manager's office, and they ask for support or a recognition item. And so our process is for requests for recognition items to go to the recognition committee, which is the mayor and mayor pro tem. So I'm just bringing that up because that's a different avenue that those requests come to us. And I think council should think about how that might work with council members. Aceves's suggestion that if a council member wants to give consideration to an item, follow the protocol we discussed earlier that we're refining. So my point is there's two different ways that these items come to us, and at this point there would be two different approaches, and you should probably think about if you're comfortable with that or if you want something that's more uniform or not.
Well, I agree with Councilmember Bennett. What is the problem that we're solving here? I don't remember voting on any Save the Whale movement or nuclear free zone or share the wealth or anything else here. It doesn't come up very often, but occasionally when it does, there may be a certain urgency, a certain coherence philosophically with what we're attempting to do here locally, and so I think we should leave the option open, but without burdening us further with another rule as to whether we can do it or not. And the beauty of this, of course, is we've got people up here of independent mind who will vote for something or against something depending on their own lights. And I don't see us wasting a lot of time on things that will be considered superfluous by the majority of this council.
Okay, just to recap, there is not consensus about moving forward with a new protocol and just leave it as is. Ms. Green, does that give you enough discretion? Because I know that a lot of things come through. It's not specifically a recognition item. It's a request for presentation time at the beginning of the meeting, and I'm not familiar with the process. Do you then bring those to the mayor, mayor pro tem, in the council setting meeting, or how does that work?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I forgot about that. The requests for presentations are covered in the agenda setting meetings. So that would actually be a third avenue. just to let council know.
We did have that one gentleman that came to us wanting to support World Peace, I think it was.
World Peace Day or
World
Day Without War.
A Day Without War.
Yes.
Which had nothing to do with the city.
So what would happen if something like that came up and mayor said yes, mayor pro tem said no?
Then it comes to the council for a vote.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's irrelevant.
Anytime it's a
yeah, that's why I think, I mean, that worked out. It did come to the council, and the council did not agree. So I would say leave it the way it is. It's been working so far.
And I think that the policy should also apply to proclamations, notice of appreciations, and agenda items. I mean, we've got the vetting through the mayor and the mayor pro tem, and if there's no agreement, then if they want to take it to the vote, then it comes to us for a decision.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's where the agenda process comes in.
And the agenda process, yeah. Also.
Mayor pro tem, if I may, that is set in the recognition committee policy as well.
Okay. Thank you.
I remembered that.
Thank you.
All right.
The next two, I think, are pretty simple requests, but of course, they're up to your discretion. Under the rules of decorum and procedures on page 5, line 37, it now says create time estimate for each agenda item as part of the role of the mayor. The proposed change is to review the time estimate for each agenda item. The reason for this change is...
Because that's what's being done?
I'm sorry?
Because that's what's already being done?
Well, since I don't sit in those meetings, I should not weigh in on that item.
Well, yeah, it does reflect the current process, because when the executive staff has our weekly meetings to review future agendas and, you know, to build the framework of what we present to the Mayor Pro Tem, we always talk about what can we fit in the time given. So we are preparing those time estimates and providing those to the Mayor and Mayor Pro Tem already.
Okay, let me say at this point that I think you do a terrific job on estimating the time. I mean, frequently we're down to the minute, and I think that's an art form to be able to do that. But of course, we don't want to be bound by it either, you know, like that bike thing. That kind of, I don't think it got away from us, but it certainly demanded a vigorous discussion of it. So I don't know what needs to be clarified here exactly.
Just the wording. The existing rules say that under the role of the mayor will create the time estimate.
Oh,
but
okay.
That doesn't happen. So we'd rather it reflects practice,
yeah.
Which
okay.
is reviewed.
That, as mayor and someone who has never created a time estimate, review is fine with me.
Review is fine.
And since I was the one that established the time agenda anyway, the word change doesn't make any difference. The reason why we had create was because we had a problem in communicating that we had just received a bunch of emails on an item, and we knew just by nature of the emails that it was going to be longer than what was presented by the manager on the agenda. I'm not talking about this manager now. And so it's important that the mayor wrote Mayor Pro Tem, when you meet with the city manager, if you have received a number of responses, or you know there's going to be a number of responses, that you take that into consideration when they're creating the timed agenda. Consensus.
So it sounds like we have consensus, and we'll move on in the interest of time. I'd like to skip over the next slide and come back to that as the last one, given we have about 15 minutes left, 20 minutes. This is an edit or clarification based on what is practice right now. Under preparing for council meetings, it says that council members will ask their questions on the agenda reports by at least noon on Monday prior to the council meeting. Well, not all the council members actually get to meet with the city manager before noon on Monday, and so we're proposing that that be changed to council members will ask their questions by 5 p.m., if possible, the evening before the council meeting.
Agreed.
Yep.
Thank you. Now we're going to go back to this one under clarification of what do the right things right means under the role of city manager.
Well, of course we know what that is.
Good. It's self-explanatory,
okay,
isn't it? Come
please on. Expound.
I don't know why it needs to be in the rules.
I don't even know what it means, yeah. Can we just delete?
You
we
can
expect,
do, you're the council. You
we expect everybody to do the right thing, so yeah. I say delete it.
Just pull it out.
And well, when they don't, we let them know.
That's right.
That's right. Unfortunately, they usually do the right
thing. Yeah.
Right. Consensus to remove.
Excellent.
Break it out. Yeah, yeah. Remove.
Well, that took a lot less time than I expected. Thank you. So I'm going to jump over to the parking lot then and use this last 20 minutes, if you all agree.
That sounds
we
like
agree.
Doing the right thing right, yes. How did that get in there?
I
it was probably you, right? It says?
Think that do the right thing right might have been. Yes,
yep.
We can cross one thing off the list. So not all of these probably are items that we can do in 20 minutes or less. So is there anything on this first page that jumps out at you as something that we can do fairly quickly?
Do the political one in 3 minutes.
Okay, let's do that one then. We're going to do political activity.
Basically, we all know we can't talk about...
Is your mic on?
We can't talk about political things from the dais, but the other day we had a young lady to come to speak to us, and it happened to be Election Day, and she's wearing an election button. And I think we just have to be aware of that and maybe put in our protocol that if we see people coming in with... It's I don't know if it's illegal or certainly not appropriate, but if people come in with campaign materials in the city council chambers, we've got to deal with it as a council.
No, I forgot about it. Yeah, she was wearing that. I won't say the name, but she was wearing
Yes, I won't say the name either. Yeah.
Would that be restricting the right to free speech and freedom of expression?
It's a public building. You can't actually, you cannot electioneer in a public building.
You always look at who you're controlling with those comments. That is true that public employees cannot electioneer in a public building and cannot no one can use the public resources for electioneering. But those are where the controls are. We get into a difficult scenario. We touched on it briefly in the earlier comments of how do you restrict, how do you control the public? We don't have the same level of control, but we do have expectations and norms. And I think some of the things along this, as you come up with your expectations, it's like where we did talk about it in the procedures. We have an expectation that the public is not going to be slanderous or defamatory in their comments. There are other expectations, and certainly what I'm hearing and expecting is that you don't expect it to be electioneering. Those are things that we can post either on the website as suggestions for speakers. Know that you've only got 3 minutes. Know that this is the difference between public comments and speaking on an item and those kinds of things. But we can also post those things in the foyer near where the public speaker slips are so that as the public come in, they know what the expectations are. You try to modify the behavior without using the enforcement tools of preventing them from their First Amendment exercise. It's just, it is like some of the other speech that you want to discourage. You want to be very judicious in restricting their ability to speak. But you end up two First Amendment items, both the freedom to speak, but you also have the political speech. And we have set up a limited purpose public forum. This is one area when people come up for public comments that is specifically designated where there is an expectation that people can speak. We limit it, as we talked about, to things that are within the jurisdiction. The area where you'll see it, we occasionally see it, you'd like to see it at a minimum, and I think Goleta residents have been good about it at keeping it at a minimum, but in elections for council seats or on measures that are there. That's within the jurisdiction of the city, and those are always allowable as public comments, but that's not what you want to hijack your meeting with. You don't want this to be a campaign rally. You want this to be about conducting business. You get your 3 minutes. It's the public forum is allowed for that. It's something within the jurisdiction, and you move on. You'd rather they use a different forum, but you don't want to be in a position of preventing them from doing that.
I'd be interested in, before making a decision on this, I'd be interested to hear, and I didn't see this one coming, so I didn't do any research on it, but what other municipalities, do they have restrictions? I'm just curious what others do.
That's something we can get some feedback and get that back for you.
Yeah, and I'd also like answered the use of our televised program is publicly supported tax dollars, and it's not, and the use of a campaign. I just like that our research and come back.
I'd like to weigh in on this thing and just suggest that I think we need to be really careful. Again, I haven't seen an issue that we're speaking to brought to us. And it makes me wonder, it's a slippery slope. We have the community center, which has traditionally been used as a forum for political debates and political presentations. We have the community center used as a location for churches. And you get into the issue of church and state, the separation thereof. So it just seems to me, I think we need to be incredibly careful. And the more pertinent issue might be, is this portion of the city hall available or not for that kind of public discourse? It's been established, the community center certainly is, but we haven't made any rules in regards to this facility on the political side. But I think we would be doing ourselves a disservice to try to begin to throw in all these restrictions, because I think that we would create a problem where we don't have a problem today. People that are resistful of that are going to come forward, and we're going to hear from them, whether you like it or not. And they're going to talk, and they're going to take their 3 minutes. And we just haven't had that as an issue. We just haven't had that as a problem. So I don't know what we're trying to solve in that regard. And we know for a fact public employees can't campaign. They can't use any of the facilities for that purpose. And that's the restriction that government has put upon us, appropriately so, I might say. But outside of that, I just think it gets to be a pretty slippery issue.
I think because we haven't had a problem doesn't mean we don't look into it and see what the prohibitions should be. So we'll send it back to our city attorney to look at it. It should put us in a defensible position, and we know, so we should know as a council what's appropriate in our council chambers and what isn't legally defensible.
Well, I don't have a problem with our attorney taking a look at it, but I can't imagine telling somebody that because they have a lapel pin on that they can't come into council.
The campaign button just reminded me of the issue. What if somebody came in with big campaign signs and, you know, supporting whatever? Is that appropriate in the council chambers? What if they came up and said, you know, I'm endorsing or I'm voting today for so-and-so? I mean, is that what this is? I mean, I think it needs to be reviewed, see what is allowable. And if it's allowable, then we know. If it's not, then we have a protocol that says what is not allowable.
I can tell you for a fact, in personal experience, the Board of Supervisors hearing room has been used for all the above you just described, with huge signs unveiled at the rear of the room.
Does it make it legal?
I'm just saying. We don't have the problem. I'd hate to bring attention to it and create an atmosphere where people feel compelled to have to come speak to us and argue against it and continue to come speak to us and argue against it.
I was wrong. It took more than 5 minutes.
I will come back with some information for you. I may do that offline, but I can envision some suggestions of some other ways, some other areas where we might have that you can consider where it might be appropriate to implement some of these rules. And what I'm already hearing is, and I think we've known this, is probably pretty low on our list, but looking at some more clear rules on use of facilities and what we allow them to. And certainly that's on our plate anyway, was on our plate as we were looking at renewing the lease with the community center, and will become more so as we move further in that process. But expanding that to also include City Hall will be. And by that token, the public access or the Channel 19, we do have some protocols and rules with that. But those are, I think, things that are outside of this set of rules, but are areas that would be good for council to know what we've got and what we need to do. So, and we do have it on our list.
So a couple others that I think we may be able to get to in a short amount of time. A couple of things that came up on slide 14, on the city manager's role, adding pending legislation to one of her roles. Do we have consensus that can come back in the next draft?
That was to add in both the city manager and city attorney.
Correct, to the city manager and city attorney. It's currently just with the city attorney.
Yeah.
And then also add in a protocol or a line about collaboration between the city manager and city attorney.
Yes.
So it looks like we have consensus on those.
On 14, that was just to keep council informed of issues, keep council informed timely of issues within the city. Because it says keep council informed /ask questions. I think it's two different issues.
So my question to you when I wrote that was, did you want those to be two different bullet points in the protocols? And do we have consensus to do that from the council? Jamie, can you bring up you have it. So keep the council informed would be one, and then the next bullet would be answer questions from the council in a timely manner.
Sure.
We good with that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Excellent. Progress. This is progress. And then in the role of the city attorney on slide 18, we suggested changing hire to supervise. Are we?
I think good? Both hire and supervise.
Hire and supervise. Are we good with that?
Yes.
Yep.
Great. And then changing from just advising planning commission to all city boards and commissions.
As appropriate.
Yeah.
Hearing consensus on that. Let me just see. We took care of this one. We'll have Deborah get back to Councilmember Aceves on the iPad.
You know, on the distribution of public comments, I don't know what the question was on that, but my feeling is that there ought to be a deadline on when we receive it, because we'll get it on the day of, and we don't spend any time reading it. So if the public knows, and we should let them know that public comment will be received up to, 5 o'clock the day before or something like that.
It's really helpful to get it the day before, but I certainly wouldn't want to put a restriction that we're not going to pay any attention to it. If we get it on that Tuesday, maybe they were out of town, or maybe they, couldn't get onto a computer to send us an email. I would hate to restrict it.
Well, I'm really talking about those individuals that spend a lot of time and money duplicating stuff and passing it out right before the agenda comes up, and we don't even have time to read it. I mean, if we get to communicate to them somehow that there is a cutoff date, many agencies do that.
Could there be an auto response that says, if you don't get this to us, and I'm obviously going to let you wordsmith this, if you don't get this to us the day before, we may or may not be able to read it before our council meeting or something like, just so they understand, we may not be able to get through everything if you're getting it to us at, 1:25 on the day of the council meeting or something.
Yeah, now, may is the operative word there, Yes. We set a deadline and say, if you don't get it in by then, you're taking your chances.
Yes, that's what I'm getting at, yes.
Maybe I can make a suggestion on the public outreach side rather than the we're not going to read something by this time, because we could certainly add, or I think I'm looking at the city clerk, could we add something to the agenda that says
Mayor, members of the council, we could definitely add something to the notice that we put to the public to let them know if they want to get this information to council and how to help them get that information to council in a timely fashion. We could probably also amend the agenda so that we can go ahead and clarify that as well.
That's a good idea.
Let's do that.
Great. I think there are a number of ways that we can help accomplish that. Yeah, this is the first time I'm hearing that that's a problem, since I don't see the public comments that you all receive. So we'll look into what we can do to help make that a better process, because we know you can't read all the comments on the dais.
And the other thing, and really important for the city clerk, is to make sure that we all get copies of it. And if she doesn't get it by a certain time, there's no guarantee we're all going to get a copy of it. So it makes total sense to put it on the agenda.
Mm-hmm. So it's 11:45. I think we did a pretty good job on the parking lot, given the limited time.
Yep.
Because of our city attorney taking too long.
We got five more minutes. What are
we have five more minutes. So because I'm not the initiator of these, I don't know. I don't want to presume that we can get through any of them. Although this one, maybe Councilmember Bennett, maintain a safe environment for the public and the community on slide 15. I think you were just asking for an expansion of the last bullet, which says maintain a safe environment for employees. Are you?
Yes.
Is the council supportive of us proposing adding to that language to say a safe environment for employees and the community within city facilities? Is that something?
Yeah. The public within community or within our particular facilities. It's applicable to everyone, and that's kind of self-imposing to employees only. And so my intent was to apply to everyone.
Great.
Yeah.
Good. Okay. And then Rosenberg's rules of order, do we want to?
No, we're good. It's in there. The thing on the legal issues, though, can we pull that one up?
Yeah, it's on slide 6.
The question was that I had was how we communicate legal issues to our attorney. And it's like if I was to say that Jungle Jim in the park is really unsafe, it's critically unsafe, and I think our city attorney needs to look at it. I have now weighed in on identifying something that is unsafe, first of all, from the dais, which I shouldn't have done. But now I'm referring to the city attorney. So I think there ought to be protocols where I give him that information and don't do it from here. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things at play. Let me go back with my recollection. My memory's not as good as Councilmember Bennett's, but as I recall the where this may have come up, I believe the city manager at the time may have been put in somewhat of an awkward situation in that some of the council members that were on the council at that time had a practice of talking to him and say, oh, and go tell this to the city attorney or go ask the city attorney this question, and put him in the awkward position of being a conduit of information and or a conduit of a question. We all wanted to be on the same page, the city manager, city attorney, and the council, that I've got an open door policy. I will take your phone calls, your text messages, however it is. I make myself available to you, and if you have legal questions, don't put somebody else in the position of having to convey that information to me, because invariably they're not going to understand all the nuances of the questions, or they're not going to know the follow-ups that are necessary that I might need to know in order to fully answer your question. So direct contact was the idea behind this. I think what Councilmember Aceves brings up is another point. It's related, but I think falls in that same area. And I would make this statement more broadly, and I've made it before. It's a periodic reminder. One of the things that is an element of establishing a liability on the city is whether or not we're on notice of a dangerous condition. And when a plaintiff's counsel is trying to establish that the city is monetarily liable for a condition where someone got injured, if they can pop in a tape of a city council meeting and have a city council member say, this situation is dangerous, this situation is unsafe, they're done. They can go on to the other elements of their case. And I think those comments are coming from a good place and a point of passion. But I think on reflection, in almost every one of those situations when I've gone back and talked to a council member and, you know, that comment that you made, they realized that, you know, they really were making a personal comment and not a qualified statement of, you know, objective from an engineering analysis, from a legal analysis as to what it constituted. And so we do want to make that reminder. Whether or not that elevates to a need to include in the protocols or not is up to you. But again, that's a reminder, and I probably should put that reminder out a little more frequently. Hey, be sure you want to talk about your concerns. You'd like to see something looked into, whatever, those are great, but don't use the words unsafe or dangerous, because they make my job harder down the road.
I think one of the things that you touched on in regards to comments being made to a certain city manager back in the day, part of that was driven because that was the process. We often didn't have any legal counsel here, and so as a result, that information, the only way it got put forward was through the city manager. And you did make the statement way back when you came on, about your open door policy, and please feel free to come in here and, you know, let me know your concerns and let me know about those things. So I just am letting you know, it's just one of those things that was kind of happened, but it wasn't because of you. It was because of the previous circumstances, and you have in fact tried to clarify that and make it very clear to all of us that we need to visit your office from time to time.
We are at 11:51, so congratulations. You've made it through a majority of the information. We just have a few bullet points that merit a little more time at a future meeting, But we'll capture these in a summary document and follow up and prepare some information for you, follow up on the items that we have said that we would do, and really appreciate your time and the collaborative nature with which you've had this discussion, and that you are respectful and brought up thoughtful comments that will help us do our job better and help you continue to operate as a functional body. So I'm going to pass it back to Mrs. Green.
I just wanted to thank all the staff that have participated today, in particular Valerie. This is a new role, one of her new roles in her new position. So great job, and I think you're very talented as a mediator, or, you know, someone who assists us in these processes. So we'll work to get a follow-up meeting scheduled as quickly as we can while this item is still fresh in our minds, with the hope of wrapping up in a subsequent session and then bringing the changes to council for adoption at your July meeting.
Okay. All right, if we could work that next meeting, I have to say my blood ran cold when you said the next meeting, you know. But if we could work that into other meetings that we're having, you know, we could just tack it on, because how long would you guess, if you put your feet to the fire, how long would you think we need to talk about this?
I think we have 30 minutes or less.
30 minutes, okay.
If we were to work it into an already scheduled council meeting, we cannot add it to June 21st. Our deadline for agenda items is over. And so you wouldn't be able to have that discussion until our July meeting. And so bringing back changes for adoption wouldn't occur until your August meeting.
Now, that prospect doesn't bother me. Is anybody concerned with that time frame? No, we're good with that.
Is there any ones that we can clear up in 7 minutes?
I think we're past our time.
Are we locked into
share info, Tony?
Well, I'll clear on the second page. The last item on there, all I was asking is on the off-year elections, that just be included in the language that the council member communicate to the city clerk that they wish to have a discussion about changing their assignment. Because right now the clerk kind of just agendizes it automatically, and then we have a discussion, but the policy is we do it every 2 years.
So an off year.
So an off year, if I want off of the finance committee, I send the city clerk an email, I'd like off of the finance committee. So when we do our November or December rotations, we can have a discussion then.
So
we would probably, from a wordsmithing standpoint, at the end of council member on the third line, in cases where a council member communicates to the city clerk,
yeah,
that they would like a change to his or her appointment. So just by adding that phrase, that's something that's easily accomplished.
And do we have consensus from the council on making that change?
Yeah,
sure.
Okay, great. And then, Councilmember Seves, did you want to say anything about the meeting order? That was when we were talking about.
Oh, the issue was having public comment before council has the ability to ask questions of staff. That doesn't work in my mind, because we spent a lot of time researching the item, and the questions that we may ask may be questions the public's going to ask, and it may shorten the public speaking time. If there's someone that has a long presentation on a certain topic, then they can always get a hold of the mayor, and he can allocate the time to get that done, but it should be under the public comment portion of the meeting.
I'm okay with that, as long as we are okay with having questions, continuing to ask questions of staff during the discussion period. And I think that's what I heard from you, Tim, is that we can do that. As a follow-up, there's a question maybe that somebody's brought up that we didn't think of, but now we are wondering about that.
Right. There should be a clear differentiation of when you're done taking in information, but following the public comment, there should be an opportunity both for staff to respond to the public and for the council to ask for additional information from staff based upon anything that came out from public.
And I guess, you know, my concern with that is that I know that in the past there's been situations where, when I was mayor, I remember asking, does staff want to comment on any of those questions, and they don't comment.
Sometimes they don't.
So, but we may be wanting to have an answer to that. So we still have the the opportunity to ask the question.
What we've done in the past, as you adopted and then as you revised these, I think after both of those, we had opportunities to have some training sessions with staff that do presentations and work on a number of items, but generally to work through a lot of council's expectations. So, because as you see, we don't have a lot of staff here in the chambers today. Once we have this adopted, we'll want to make sure those things are out there and just remind staff of the rule and what their role is. There are times when you know there isn't anything to respond. There, we do caution them that their role is not to debate the public comments. They've made a recommendation, and the public's not everybody in the public's going to agree with it. And their role is not to debate it or to refute it. But if there's additional information that is needed or appropriate that they didn't put in earlier, then that's an appropriate time to do that.
I had a friend who was a professor at Westmont, and he said whenever they had some sort of a committee meeting, they went on interminably because everybody in there was used to having the last word. Anyway, let me just say alluding to something that the city attorney had said. The idea of having public testimony before the council gets into the issue to a great extent there, I think has some validity. I'm not prepared to fight over it, but it's like the city attorney said, it kind of empowers the public there and implies that we're paying attention to what they have to say and weighing their evaluation of it. But if that's if we want to leave it as it is, that's fine too. So,
we always value the input, but there's a process to get their input, and that's for an orderly meeting. So if we do it under public comment, and more importantly, when we get into deliberations, the mayor needs to make a delineation. We are now in deliberations. So it's very clear at that point that we no longer ask staff questions because now it's up to us to deliberate from the information we have received.
Yeah, no, I get that. Everything's in a proper order, but just a question where we put the public comment. Frankly, I don't think it's going to make a huge difference whether it's before or after the council works the issue over, but there are a lot of smart people out there, and maybe they would give something that might deflect our conversation somewhat. But
are we making a decision on this right now, or can we bring this back? Because I feel like maybe we might need some more time.
We can certainly bring it back for further discussion. And just listening to the comments today, it occurs to me that we might want to prepare a few little scripts for a mayor, particularly someone that's serving for the first time, for these situations in which they are not necessarily equipped to handle it and think on their feet and know what the legal options are. And Tim had some great ideas today when we were talking, so we can listen to the tapes and maybe come up with that type of packet. I'm sure I will be working right in them in conjunction with the mayor, so I guess I'm giving myself another task to do.
I'm just trying to figure out if I've been insulted here.
I'm not insulting you at all.
There's a whole process that we all follow and we all learn, and there's a difference between a regular meeting and a public hearing. And so we've all used scripts. So, you know, I think that's appropriate. And to have it in the protocol is probably a good idea for future mayors.
And I was just going to say our city clerk has been excellent. Yep. In the times that I've been mayor when we've had a public hearing. She has provided the outline necessary to conduct ourselves. And I have to admit, even with the outline, I've screwed it up. But nonetheless, just so that people are clear, our staff has endeavored to keep us on the straight and narrow. And even with that, sometimes, speaking for myself, I wasn't successful. But anyway, it's being done. And to put it into writing, probably not a bad idea, you know. But it is being done. And it's very appreciative, I might add. I'm thankful for our city clerk for doing that.
Indeed, and thank you, Valerie. And if we're more or less ready to roll out the door, I want to say what a great job all you guys have done. You know, the staff has been very proficient, professional, we appreciate it, and insightful. So thank you, Valerie, and thank you, Ms. Green. I really appreciate it. Thanks to our city clerk, and I'd like to thank again our city attorney for a fine job. So if someone else has anything to say, now would be the time to say it. Otherwise, we're going to make a run for the door. Yeah? Okay, well, thanks, everybody. Meeting's adjourned.